Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Everybody in. The ceremony is about to begin.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 141. I'm Dave and I'm here with Connor. Connor from Last Sons of Krypton. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hot up there in Queensland?
It is, yes. You know, it's always hot.
It's always warm up there, man. Just like the signal blazes hot.
I got a Powerade from the fridge, so I'm just, like, sitting it on my body so it cools me down a bit.
Man, that's intense. It's very mild here. I've had about four coffees today. Was quite tired. I was up late last night. Shout out to Dion. We did Cinema of Doom for the Patreon members. We did Great Escape last night. That'll be hitting the Patreon feed later today. So I'd encourage everyone who's interested in Cinema of Doom to join up to the Patreon. Patreon.com/signalofdoom.com, and here we're going all guns blazing, and it's the second Cinema of Doom, so Dean and I were very excited. But that finished past midnight last night, our discussion. I drove home,
wow,
and I was tired, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. I think actually Ray and I went past midnight this week as well, so late nights for everyone.
And Great Escape is an almost a 3-hour movie. We watched the whole movie, and then we did probably 45 minutes discussion. So it was intense. How has your week been, Connor? What's been going on, man?
Absolutely awful. But real life stuff aside, I have been, you know, reading some comics. We started covering Kingdom Come on Last Sons of Krypton.
Oh, great. What a classic.
Yeah, it's such a good book, and it was a lot of fun to cover it. There's so much to it.
It's very rich in detail. Very rich in detail.
A little plug there, if you want us going in-depth into Kingdom Come and all the themes and stuff, then check out Last Sons of Krypton.
Is that episode up now?
No, not yet. It will be going up by Monday, hopefully.
All right. I'll definitely check that out myself, because I love Kingdom Come, man.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun to talk about, and we're really looking forward to talking about the final two issues of the story as well. Because it's interesting, because Ray hasn't read it before. Of course, I know what's coming, so I can see the foreshadowing and stuff, and Ray hasn't, so it's, you know, it's fun.
It's a great read, man, with great art, you know?
Yeah, it's really good. I was wondering if it would hold up, because I've soured a bit on Mark Waid.
But this is classic Mark Waid, you know? This is Mark Waid when he was at his best, you know?
And it's also, like, Alex Ross as well. Alex Ross co-plotted this. Like, he came up with the concept.
Yeah, that's right. So, it was his father that was the preacher or something like that. Like
His father or uncle, something like that. Actually, I've got the Absolute Edition, and the Deluxe Edition has this as well. The supplemental material is fantastic. So if you don't own it, I recommend picking it up, because it goes into every character design. It gives names to every character in the book, tells you, you know, inspirations for everything. So, yeah, really fun stuff.
Great, great, great read. Like, it was one of the comics, actually, that kept me even slightly invested in comic book reading in that period of the 90s. Like, I picked up a trade of it, and I was absolutely blown away, you know?
Yeah.
Seminal.
Yeah, it's really good. And I can definitely recommend it to any new Superman fans as well, like, because it's definitely out-and-out a Superman story that you can just read.
I think Superman never been more interesting than in Kingdom Come. I think Kingdom Come is one of the best Superman depictions I've ever read.
It definitely is. It definitely is up there. I wouldn't call it my favorite, but it's definitely up there. Yeah. I think it's one of my favorite visual designs of the character. That's for sure.
For sure. And I mean, Batman's cool too in the armored suit.
I really like that and how it's. It kind of implies, I guess, like his back was broken.
Everything. Like if not broken by Bane, by the constant, you know, battering it's taken in the, you know, basically in a lifetime of fighting crime.
Yeah.
I had I had a statue, or it was kind of a really deluxe action figure of Kingdom Come Batman, and I'm not sure if I still have it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had it for a long time, and I think it might have broken eventually. But I mean, I had it for a long time. It was one of my building blocks of my collection, and I'd still like to get another one like it. It was just really good. Like, it was the full armored suit with the wings wrapping around.
Yeah.
And I just remembered we're doing The Crow this week, people at home. For Stu out there who's marking the card, we are doing The Crow by Joe Barr, I think I'm correct in saying.
James O'Barr, yeah.
Well, I'm not correct in saying. So James. James. What is it? James.
O'Barr,
okay. Yeah, that's coming this week. For me this week. Haven't had a chance to dive into Fallen Order. We'll do so later tonight. I've been watching Planet of the Apes, the original 70s movies or 60s. I watched Beneath the Planet of the Apes during the week one night. It's got one of the wildest endings of any movie I've ever seen. Have you seen Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Connor?
No, not yet. Hopefully next week.
Okay.
Because, I could only see my friend very briefly to pick up Kingdom Come from him.
Right.
Because I lent it to him, so...
Right.
We didn't have time for a movie, unfortunately, but soon, hopefully.
Well, when you do see it, we'll discuss it, because it's well worthy of discussion, especially the end, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I would look forward to discussing it, for sure.
And I've actually started the third one, because I bought the box set a while ago. I got it on sale very cheaply, and like I just love them. I think those original 60s movies are just so classic, you know? Like, they've got so much personality to them. Now, I noticed that you've got you finished Leviathan. You need to talk about it.
Oh, man.
Well, Event Leviathan, I struggled through about four issues of it. I thought it was the dullest event ever.
Well, because we've talked about Leviathan a lot on this podcast, even after we stopped reading it.
Sure. Left a bad taste in my mouth, that's for sure.
Yeah, I decided to keep reading it, which I don't regret, because I actually quite liked the last... issue.
Well, what happened? Tell us what happened. Wrap it up for us.
Okay, so Leviathan gets revealed finally. In fact, they don't find out who he is. He just reveals, like, so Superman shows up, and like he pretty much goes straight to Leviathan itself, and then Leviathan reveals himself to Superman, which kind of makes you wonder, what's the point of all the detective stuff that was going on in the first place if Superman just shows up and goes to Leviathan?
Very true.
And yes. Oh, more on this after. So Leviathan reveals himself, and he's Mark Shaw, the original Manhunter. And I thought that was really cool, because I like the Manhunters, and... for me, it makes perfect sense that it is a Manhunter, that's Leviathan.
Green Lantern Manhunters, is this, or something else?
Yeah, the Green Lantern Manhunters.
Okay, cool.
So it's like, hey, I didn't actually expect this guy to be Leviathan. It's a cool reveal. You know, bit of a clap for Bendis there. I thought that was nice. Yeah. And his conversation with Superman was really interesting. And then you have, like, the Detective Stooges all clowning around, and they finally find out who Leviathan is, and they go to Leviathan and get Superman out of there. But they expose, like, Lois Lane exposes him, and it ends, and Leviathan is annoyed at Superman and everything, and he's like, okay, I guess if I can't do this, I'll just destroy everything. And then it goes to be continued in Action Comics 1018.
Not
and I was
not
like,
surprised.
My eyes nearly popped out of my head and went to the wall, because I'm like, why was this event here? Why didn't they just continue the storyline in Action Comics? You can cut out all the bullshit of the detectives, like, getting every single guess wrong until the last issue.
Because I think they wanted Bendis' name on an event at DC, basically.
But, like, the only important characters ended up being Lois Lane and Superman. Like...
yeah. But, like, I'm being cynical.
Could have just it. Action Comics.
I know, but they want to. They're trying to pump Bendis as much as possible, so they're trying to give him an event
that
people who don't just buy Superman buy. It was so fucking dull. Like, really.
It was.
Incredibly boring.
I struggled getting through all of it, except for the last issue, which I liked. And it's like, so, you know, now people who are reading Superman, they read through Action Comics, they're like, oh, this Leviathan Rising thing. Okay, it's gone away for a bit. Oh, now he's back and we know who he is. You know what I mean? Like, this is for the trade buyers.
Yeah.
You know, people who wait for the trade collections, they're going to be confused. And it's like, oh, you have to get Leviathan and wade through five issues of, like, non-relevant shit.
Boring.
But anyway, so that was just, I thought I'd update you on how it all ended up. So
can I ask a question? Is Manhunter the same Manhunter that I know Archie Goodwin played with in the 70s? I've got a Tales of... in Batman, I think Manhunter was in the backups. Is that the character we're talking about?
I am going to guess yes, but I'm going to Google and double check.
I know it's very highly regarded, that run. I know Archie Goodwin is an absolute god of an editor and was a very good writer when he wrote. And I know that run is really well regarded, and I intend to read it actually potentially for the Signal.
Okay, it's not the same Manhunter. No.
Oh, okay.
It's Mark Shore, not Paul Kirk.
Okay, I'm thinking of doing that in a Signal. Like that Archie Goodwin collection, I'm thinking of doing it for a Signal episode, if you'd be interested.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, one of those collections that I've been meaning to read for a long time, and I just keep getting sort of, you know, distracted. That's potential. That could potentially be next week's read. Out of 10, what was the event out of 10?
Oh, Leviathan? Look, I'd give it, I don't know, a 4, because wow. I did like the, you know, Superman and Leviathan dialogues, but...
Sure. Wow, that was an interesting sound effect that we just heard.
Sorry, that's my phone ringing. Yeah, it's not a good event. It's crap. It sucks. I liked the last issue, but, you know, that's like, what, one issue I like out of 6, and it was still like... You know, so
it just doesn't sound very interesting, man. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like a very 90s, like late 90s event where really it should have stayed within the Superman titles, really, you know?
Yeah. So if you are reading Action Comics, then I'm just going to say read Leviathan issue 6.
Yep.
Or just read from 4 onwards if you really want all the Superman and Lois Lane stuff. That's important, and just to give you an idea of what's going to be happening in upcoming Action Comics. But
That's a very good summary, though. Thank you, Connor, for that, because you've done a service to the fans and to the nation, basically, and to the globe. And I want to shout out to some of our listeners. We've had a massive increase in British listeners over the last couple of weeks. Shout out to all our friends in the UK. Mongolia, always representing in the sales numbers. UK is fantastic. And obviously all our US and Australian listeners, you are very steady for us. And, guys, don't be afraid to check out the Patreon, because I do make it worth your while. Now, I want to say RIP to Tom Lyle. He was a very accomplished artist who broke into the industry in the mid-80s. Sadly had, a brain aneurysm several weeks ago and had been in kind of a coma and has now unfortunately passed away. Chuck Dixon spoke some very nice words on his blog about it. They broke in at the same time. Tom Lyle, I know, did some Robin and stuff with Chuck, and I think they worked on multiple projects. Yep. Just a really good artist, and a lot of people spoke very highly of him. There was a genuine sadness across the comic book community at that news.
Yeah. That always sucks when this happens.
Yeah, it does, man. Like, and you know what? You know, I don't mean to hijack this, but I saw that, like, there was a GoFundMe for his wife's medical bills, which to me is a criminal indictment on how poorly comic book creators are treated, you know?
Yeah.
Just the second that there's a serious medical expense, because, of course, he had a brain aneurysm, you know, big medical bills, and, you know, her husband's passed away, and... You just get the sense that there's very little financial security for these for these freelance professionals, you know?
Yeah.
It blows, basically. Think about donating to that cause. That's a very worthy cause. Moving on, there was some chat last week when we had the lovely Natasha on the show about Red Dead. And I know you were kind of clapping back at us a little bit, Connor, because I actually quite like Red Dead myself. I find it a bit slow, but I've played, like, fucking 100 hours probably, you know what I mean? Like, so I quite like it. I'm deep in chapter 4. I think what I've worked out what it is I want more stuff to be popping off in the actual game, like in GTA, that isn't directly connected, following the story points. Do you know what I mean? I just feel like they could fill the world out a bit more.
So do you mean like more side missions?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. Because I, I think the world is really full, but it's like you find all that stuff through exploration.
Okay.
And maybe there is side missions. Yeah.
There are a lot of side missions. I don't know. Like I really enjoy it. I've put in like quite a lot of hours into the game, and I actually got on a kind of jag of playing it over the last week or so. I actually had a couple of big play sessions, and it's a lovely game. Like it looks fantastic. As you say, there's a lot of stuff going on. I just think it could be maybe a bit more violent and a bit more manic. You know how GTA is kind of manic. I think maybe they're jacking it up a little bit. You know,
they obviously, because the way the story goes. so obviously the story starts off a bit slow, but like I think the story gets that good that I consider it up there to be one of my favorite westerns along with movies. You know, like I think they did that good a job. It's kind of telling when. Like, Red Dead pretty much sweeps every single award except for gameplay.
Okay.
You know? So it's like, it is a slow burn. It's kind of like more of a movie sometimes than a game, but...
true.
Yeah, obviously, I think most of, like, the effort and stuff, I mean, was less about kind of making it wacky and stuff, and this is more about creating, like, the authentic sort of... Like, you know, you look in the store catalogs and it has, like, the old ads in the 1800s and stuff for products.
Yeah.
And everything. Yeah, the Western feel.
My semi-automatic pistol. I fucking love that thing now. I've got the semi-automatic pistol. Like, I enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. I've gunned up big time. There's parts of this game that I just fucking dig. I've got a question for you. Can you go, like, in, say, a State of Decay, you can get someone to partner with you. I've got a particular mission. It's not even really a mission. It's these guys guarding a hideout, basically. And I'm finding it a bit hard just with one player to beat them. Can I bring someone in?
You can't bring
anyone
along.
That sort of stuff.
As far as I know, you can't.
Yeah, that's kind of annoying to me. Because I would like to bring another gun along, you know?
Yeah, I guess all I can say is just rack up that Deadeye meter.
Yeah.
Start blowing some skulls off.
True. Well, that's a good point. You know, I almost beat it the other day, and I almost beat the actual... It's just like a random sort of these guys hiding out in a fort, and I just happened to run by them, and I just wanted to dispatch a bit of justice, you know? And I am doing the greetings, like you said. And my guy has trended slightly to. I was right in the middle, so he's trended slightly upwards. But just by doing the greetings, you do notice that.
Oh yeah. Hey there, Mister.
your honor goes up a little bit, so it's a good game. Disney Plus launched in Australia during the week. I picked it up. Michelle and I were very impressed. There's a big catalog, man. Big catalog. Obviously. The Mandalorian was the main thing. Now, are you saying you're not watching this at all? Because it is quite good, no. Connor. In all honesty, it is quite good. Like, really, it's much better than the movies have been since the sequel movies. Much better. Much more feel of, like, it's got a feel similar to parts of New Hope when they're on Tatooine, if you recall, in the bar, whatever it's called.
I don't doubt that it's good, I'm sure, but I refuse to... Yeah, I'm done. I'm just done.
What, for good
I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, I'll be picking up that Charles Saul Star Wars title next year.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that on the show for sure.
But, like, TV shows and stuff, I have no interest. You can wave all these things in my face, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to forget what you've done. So feel free to spoil away, I guess.
Well, I mean, okay, I will a little bit. I mean, it's kind of what you would expect. There's a really good scene. There's a lot of stuff with the Mandalorian, you know, kind of walking around. He meets an IG, I forget what kind of level IG droid it is, IG-11 perhaps, and you get to see an IG droid in action, like with, you know, its turret kind of moving around and shooting and stuff. Looks really good. You see a baby Yoda. I'm sure you saw that on the... on Facebook.
Yeah, I've seen that everywhere.
It is good. The Yoda has Force powers,
They're kind of doing like a lone wolf and cub thing, or
that's exactly what I thought of as well. And I'm thankful that someone has mentioned that, because I've definitely thought of that as well, but I hadn't seen that in the analysis at this point. But that's very much what I thought of. Yeah, it's just good. It's just got a real solid Star Wars-y kind of feel. You see a lot of throwbacks to the original trilogy of movies in terms of some of the, like, there's the Nick Nolte plays, or what are they called? They're the, like, creatures, Ugnogs or something they're called. Ugnaughts.
Ugnaughts?
Yeah, he plays one of those. Jawas feature heavily in Episode 2. The you know, the Jawa massive, you know, basically huge tank that's in New Hope. You basically see one of those.
Yeah.
You see quite a bit of stuff with the Jawas in Episode 2. He hasn't taken his helmet off yet in two episodes. He's spoken. He's a man of few words, but he does speak. But he hasn't taken the helmet off yet, so I think that'll be a pivotal point in the storyline. In general, it's just very interesting. It's a bit slow burn. I mean, you like westerns. It's definitely going for a space western feel, you know?
Yeah, see, like the lone wolf and cub thing, the western thing, it being set on Tatooine, like they're things that, you know, if the Last Jedi and stuff, or if pretty much nearly everything Disney Wars hadn't happened, then this is something that would really interest me.
Sure.
But I'm just so burned out and burnt from them that I just, like they'd have to do something ridiculously spectacular to get me to check it out. So,
will you see Episode 9 in cinemas or not?
No.
No, fair enough. And I
first
I think
one episode, that I wouldn't have seen.
I think Episode 9 is going to be a lot more disappointing than this show, you know?
No doubt.
Now, in terms of Disney Plus's wider offerings, I've been lost in a world of watching some Spider-Man cartoons. They've got pretty much most, not all, of the Spider-Man cartoons. There's no Spectacular Spider-Man, but there's definitely several other ones. They've got the original X-Men animated series. There's Darkwing Duck on there. There's all the Disney classics. Some Disney more modern show. Well, a stack of Disney more modern shows. Like, it's quite an attractive offering at the price point, which in Australia I think was $8.99 per month, or about $80 Australian annually, which I did get the annual package. It's a very cool package overall, a very attractive package by Disney out of the gate, and it's fantastic to see Australia getting it a week after the States and with the same vast library as well, you know? Because nothing annoys me more than being region locked out of like half the content.
I think Europe's a bit away from getting Disney Plus, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a long wait there for at least big portions, but they'll quick to roll it out here in New Zealand. So, I mean, I'm just thankful for that, because I'll definitely be getting a lot of use out of it for sure. I mean, I was loving it, watching some Spider-Man cartoons the other night.
Yeah, I saw.
just a good time. Now, it's official. Joker has become the first R-rated movie to make $1 billion at the box office. That's amazing, considering it was a reasonably low-budget movie, by Hollywood standards. I don't think it was much more than about $60 million they spent making it.
Yeah, it's a huge profit. I guess they would have spent a fair bit on advertising, though.
Yes.
But it's still, like, a massive profit, I think.
It's a huge win for DC, for Warner's, this particular movie. There were reports of a Joker sequel that's now been denied by sources, and the Joker director, Todd Phillips, wants to helm even more DC character origin story films. There was talk of a Mr. Freeze movie potentially being on the cards.
I want to see a Luther movie.
Yes, Luther was also on the cards as well.
And Captain Condiment.
The Condiment King, do you mean?
Yeah, Condiment King. Yeah. I should try my hardest to start a clickbait rumor that the Condiment King is getting an original movie, and see if, like, Cosmic Book News and stuff retweet reports. Ooh, sources say Condiment King's getting a...
Who? Was it Chuck Dixon who created Condiment King? I know he did a lot of stuff with him, but I'm...
We should actually, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to check that out, because I love Condiment King. He's in some really funny... Like, he's in the animated series, but he's also in some funny stuff in Chuck's...
Detective. I don't know who's in the animated series.
I think there is at least one episode where he's... he was Condiment King, created by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini for the Batman animated series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Who makes use of various condiments, sometimes capable of causing anaphylactic shock, as his weapons. He's generally used as comic relief within the series. So they created it for the series, much like Harley Quinn, basically.
Yeah.
Obviously, Harley Quinn was, you know, a lot more popular, but Conn McKing's funny.
He'll have his day.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Sin City, Legendary inks a deal with Frank Miller in talks with Robert Rodriguez for a TV series based on Sin City. This is potentially quite interesting. Did you enjoy the movies or the comics?
I've only seen the first movie. I haven't read the comic and I haven't seen the second movie, but I did enjoy the first movie.
Yeah, I've only read a little bit of the comics, but I own them all, and I'm thinking that would be another one for Signal to do, you know, the comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I fucking loved that first movie. I thought that first movie was fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good. I haven't seen it in, I don't know, a long time. But,
Either, but I remember at the cinema it made a real impact on me. Now, this is interesting. Are you a Nick Cage fan?
Oh, absolutely. I love him.
There's Meta, and then there's Nicolas Cage playing a down-on-his-luck version of himself who has to pretend to be various Nicolas Cage characters in order to escape a dangerous situation. I think it's called something like The Unbearable Weight of Immense Talent or something like that.
It sounds amazing. And I think I heard something about how his character, which is him, would, you know, be doing like a bunch of crappy movies because he needs the money. To pay off tax or something, which is like exactly reality. What's happening. So
yeah.
So if that ever happened, I would definitely see it. I'd be curious as to who the director would be.
I'm curious to know what Nicolas Cage's financial situation is now, because it's been quite some time since he may have settled those tax debts by now with the amount of work he's done.
But he keeps spending money, I think. So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
If I go to his IMDb page, I wonder how many projects he has coming up.
He does a lot of direct DVD and video, a lot.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting. You were saying Mandy was a good movie, were you not?
Yeah, I really liked Mandy.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit down and watch the whole thing. I've got it to watch. He's an interesting actor, a really fantastic actor, actually, more than interesting.
Yeah, he's really good.
What are the chances of him? I could see him playing a rogue in like a Batman or Spider-Man. You know, like, I mean, he's the kind of actor who could really seize and make the most out of one of those roles.
Yeah, especially if you give him the right director as well.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised he hasn't done that already.
I'm not sure who he'd play, honestly. I'd have to think about it and really thought about it before.
Well, I mean, we just spoke about Mr. Freeze. I could see him doing a Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I could have seen him doing a Riddler as well.
Yeah, have our Riddler.
Riddler is now being cast, but there's plenty of Batman villains that I think, you know, he could give his own spin to. There was a Forbes article.
Condiment King,
yeah.
Yeah.
that'd be fantastic. There was a Forbes article about DC Comics and where does it fit with AT&T's vision for Warner Media. This is a continuation of the same kind of discussion we've heard a lot of in recent years in terms of, like, Jeanette Kahn, when she was the president of DC, really sold the higher-ups on that, like, the publishing line was like a testing ground for ideas. And she really got them to buy into that vision, whereas in more recent times, DiDio and Jim Lee have had a lot more trouble, as, you know, because apparently the higher-ups are going, how is your old catalogue so radically outselling your new comics? I would argue because the storytelling was better. It was fresher. It was fresher, and a lot of it, the classic stuff they repackage is just better, you know?
Hey, they know what they're doing. They're going to save DC with their reboot, replacing Clark Kent with Jonathan. And, you know, Luke Fox is the new Batman. That's going to be the move that saves DC. Ooh, and a timeline. Yes. That'll fix everything.
Who cares about their timeline, dude? Like, honestly, really honestly, who gives a shit about their timeline? It's so fucking stupid.
Most of what's considered the best DC stories are, like, out of continuity stories, so
yeah, exactly, yeah,
you know,
I just think it's like no one really, or very few people, care about that timeline very much. It's not going to save anything, and I mean, apparently, I was listening to John Suntress. He's convinced that Bendis believes this bullshit that, like, Clark Kent is going to reveal his identity for good. I just struggle to believe that's going to become the status quo for longer than, say, 5 years. I don't understand it, really.
I don't know how long it'll last.
I hope not.
I mean, I don't know. Like, people are freaking out about it, but I'm just like, you know, God, the guy's had 80 years of comics. He's, you know, there's some crazy stuff that's happened. Do you remember when he was dead?
I'm interested. Like, I'll be honest, I'm interested in it. I sort of want to see it. And I think it's coming in January or February, isn't it, the reveal?
I think December. Superman. No, is it December? No, I don't know. But Superman 18 is going to be the first, like, part of the story arc, which is called The Truth. Which is funny because what was the previous arc where he revealed his identity called Truth? So they put a "the" in front.
How long ago was that?
I think it would have been. It was. I think it was like 2015.
So not very long ago.
No, not long ago at all. And they're doing it again. And it's like what it did then actually was harm the character. Like, because he was having like a good run before that, and then they just. Yeah, it was bad.
Really? So back in 2014-15, he revealed his identity to the world, did he?
Well, it got exposed. He didn't, really? Like, reveal it. It got exposed, so...
I see. And how was that wiped away? Was that Mr. Miss Pizzolek or something that wiped it away?
Beyond convoluted. Superman... Because this Rebirth shit came in, and they just...
Right.
Everyone loves to suck off Superman Rebirth, but that just made things so convoluted and messy, and it all got fixed in Superman Reborn, which put everything back to sort of status quo, I guess.
Fair enough.
Mr. McSpeakley.
It was. I'm not surprised. I remember back in the 90s, after they did Death of Superman, later in the 90s, they did far less successfully Death of Clark Kent.
Yeah.
I thought that
was pretty good.
Well, I just mean in terms of pop culture bounce, they were going. I remember it was reported on, and you know, Death of Superman was like a full on like event,
that
basically shook the world. Death of Clark Kent, it was like he was assassinated, wasn't it?
I haven't actually read it.
Okay,
but it's one of the things I'm interested in reading. It's just, I'm doing a read through, and I'm not up to it yet. Plus, like the trade of the Death of Clark Kent is out of print. So.
Yeah. I just remember it at the time because they were very much at that period trying to sort of, copy kind of the success of Death of Superman, and it was reported on Entertainment Tonight. I actually remember it. We've got some information here. You put this in today. We had the powers that be over at Warner Brothers and New Line and maybe trying to entice none of Jim Carrey to return to the role of Stanley Ipkiss in the sequel to director Chuck Russell's hit 1994 adaptation of The Dark Horse comic hero The Mask. So what?
You put that in.
I put that in. Did I really? Okay, I don't even remember. So The Mask obviously was a big, big movie for Jim Carrey back in the day. I mean, I remember it well. Based on a comic book, if I'm not mistaken, which I've never read, apparently quite highly regarded. And, I mean,
it's good.
What do you think? Jim Carrey, I mean, a guy in search of a hit, really. Been a long time since Jim Carrey's been part of the conversation. Could he come back as The Mask?
Of all the things that are brought back and being constantly rebooted, I'd watch a Mask movie.
Yeah, it kind of feels interesting, doesn't it?
There's no reason he couldn't have The Mask again.
No, definitely not. I thought the fucking crazy movie enough. Was pretty funny, actually, like at the time.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It is a good movie, yeah. I like the comic as well. I have the first Mask omnibus, which isn't as big as you think it is. It's like a first sort of collection. But it's good.
Is it comedic?
It is. It's just a lot more violent than the movie. But that's like the main difference, is just how violent it is.
Okay. Well, I enjoyed the movie. I thought it was pretty good, actually. I thought it was a big hit for Jim Carrey coming not long after Ace Ventura. It was kind of in that run where he had a lot of... He was hitting a lot of gold for a while, you know?
Yeah.
He had a real run of hits. They didn't do a sequel to The Mask? They did a TV show or something, I think. That's what I'm thinking of. I believe there might have been a TV show.
I think they did, like, Son of the Mask as well, which was... I think that was technically a sequel, but I don't think it had Jim Carrey in it.
Right, okay. Like one of those sort of direct-to-DVD sequels they do.
Maybe. I'm not sure if it's supposed to be bad or good.
Okay, fair enough. If you're a Doctor Who fan, Series 12 writers and directors have been officially revealed. Michelle and I are almost finished watching Season 11. I actually quite like the new Doctor. Are you a Doctor Who fan, Connor?
I love, like, the old Doctor Who, like, in the 60s. Like, the first Doctor's my favourite, William Hartnell.
Really?
Yeah, I love him. He's great. And he goes to like an actual kind of character arc. A lot of the other Doctors just sort of stay the same personality-wise, but he like starts off as a grouch and he gets, you know, becomes more like the Doctor we know today. But I'm not huge on the second Doctor Who series. Like, it started with the 2000s.
I like Peter Capaldi. The rebooted Doctor, basically.
Yeah, I like Peter Capaldi, but I just don't like the writing. I haven't tried the new Doctor out. I really didn't like Stephen Moffat.
I'm definitely not a bigger fan of the rebooted series as the original. My favourite's obviously Tom Baker, followed by John Pertwee. But I love Doctor Who, so I mean, I've got a soft spot for pretty much every Doctor. I just find the writing these days, it's cheesy and constantly undermines itself dramatically. Like, it's, I don't know, I just sometimes think, my God, like, they make really big moments really dull and predictable.
The show's just changed. Like, it's not like this kind of weird sci-fi show anymore. It's just a more like an action-adventure show. I mean, I'm still sad that they stopped doing, like, the historical episodes. You know, like, you remember, like, the Aztecs and the Romans?
Oh, yeah.
Stuff like that, yeah. I love those ones.
You're still sad. It's been since, like, the early 60s.
That's true. I mean, I'm not like, super upset. It's more of just, like, a...
Yeah.
I wish they didn't get rid of those, I suppose, is a better way of putting it.
Well, yeah, I mean, what did you think of Tom Baker? Because I love Tom Baker.
I love Tom Baker. I love William Hartnell, and then my other favourites are Tom Baker and John Pertwee. They're, like, after him.
I love John Pertwee and Tom Baker. I went back, when I was growing up, Tom Baker was, you know, on Doctor Who repeats. And then I went back to the third Doctor in repeats, John Pertwee, and found there was a lot to enjoy in his episodes too. Like, he's got some really good episodes. I like all the Doctors. I'm very kind of... Like, I really liked... what's his name? Oh, God. He's the guy before Capaldi, Matt Smith. I really liked Matt Smith's run very much. And I quite like David Tennant as well. But, I wasn't as big on Capaldi. I thought the writing really, really struggled with Capaldi.
I thought it was... I just liked his personality.
He's a good actor, and he could have been a lot better in the role if given, I think, better material. I thought the material was really cheesy, like a lot of the time.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and I think it undermined the show. Dr. Sleep is the sequel to The Shining. It underperformed at the box office, and apparently Warner Brothers were greenlighting it a sequel before it underperformed. Have you seen The Shining? Because I famously haven't seen The Shining.
Yeah.
We're doing it on Cinema of Doom very shortly. And have you seen Dr. Sleep?
I haven't seen Dr. Sleep, but I have seen The Shining. The only reason I haven't seen Dr. Sleep is because I don't have any money, so...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So it will hit streaming and stuff. Now, apparently, from my understanding, Dr. Sleep is a sequel to The Shining book, not The Shining movie.
Oh, okay. Well, I can add that to... Because I've read a lot of Stephen King, but I haven't actually read The Shining, so...
Yeah, well, Stephen King famously couldn't stand The Shining movie.
Yeah.
He had quite a, you know, he thought it was a very poor adaptation, and yet it was one of the most, you know, successful adaptations of his, you know, books. Look, we're going to do it on Cinema of Doom, not next episode, but the one after. So very shortly on Cinema of Doom for Patreon listeners, we're going to do The Shining. I'm looking forward to doing it. The next one we're doing on there is Hellraiser, After Great Escape.
Ooh.
Dion's fucking choice.
Hellraiser and The Shining are both pretty great. Horror movies. Yeah. Well, I mean, Hellraiser is just like, you know, fun body horror gore fun. Like, there's not much to it, but
yeah, I think it'll be interesting. David Fincher and Robert Towney are bringing a Chinatown prequel series to Netflix. So, big sigh. Love the original movie with Jack Nicholson. Love it.
Absolutely. It's an absolute classic. One of the best movies ever made.
Yeah, it's a great, great movie. Now, I believe Robert Towney was involved in that movie, wasn't he? Was he a screenwriter or something, or potentially a director of it? Pretty sure Robert Towney was in some way involved with the original Chinatown. Nicholson himself did a sequel, The Two Jakes, in the 90s.
Oh, he did the screenplay for Chinatown.
Yeah, so I knew his name was attached somewhere. Yeah. So David Fincher and Robert Towney, two pretty respected people, but a Chinatown prequel series is where I sort of question it.
Why? Yeah. Why not just do, like, a noir series set there? Because what about Chinatown, like, begs a prequel?
I don't know.
You know, I don't need a Chinatown cinematic universe, like...
Couldn't you have just done it? Like, God, it's been a long time since I've seen the movie. Like, more than... I mean, Barrett say it's more than 20 years. I don't really even remember much about it. But, like, he was alive at the end of Chinatown. Couldn't you do a movie set... Like, couldn't you... What I'm trying to say is, couldn't you even just redo it as a series? Does it need to be a prequel?
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, I just... I guess Robert Towne did write the screenplay. Maybe there's something that he... wants to do. Maybe there's something specifically he has in mind. But or it could be just like a, ooh, let's, you know, a money thing. Like, just call it a Chinatown prequel.
And yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. Like, look, it's actually making me want to – I've got it on DVD. I'm making me want to actually, you know, watch it again, basically.
It's great.
So it's doing that at least. Like, it's got that going for it, that it's making me interested enough to think, you know what, I might actually – dig it out and watch it again. Like, I've only watched it once, and I watched it probably, you know, 25 years ago, basically.
Yeah.
So I remember it, I'm a real Jack Nicholson fan, and I went and I really watched it as more of a Jack Nicholson marathon at the time. Whereas now I'd be going back more as a fan of noir, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
With a kind of having watched a lot more noir since those days, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, just to wrap it up, I do think you could kind of, without calling it a prequel, I feel like it was a rich enough world that you could kind of tell stories in that time frame and even overlap with what the movie did, kind of thing. You know, like extend it out to a series is what I'm trying to say.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. Like, I don't remember that much about the storyline, really. I remember them saying it's Chinatown was like the saying, you know, like anything
kind of Chinatown. Yeah, maybe that would be the angle they play with.
You don't sound too
thrilled. No, I'm not, but, like, you know, I guess we'll see. I feel a bit better now that the original screenplay writer's in it. But then again, James Cameron was involved with Dark Fate, and, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, look.
Oh, my mum saw Dark Fate as well.
And what did she say?
She hated it.
Really? Okay. There we go.
Because she loves, like, the first two movies.
Yeah.
But as soon as they killed John Connor, she was like...
It is a very poor death scene for John Connor.
She didn't like the whole Arnold living with, like, this family and stuff. She thought that was really stupid.
I would agree with your mother on that. I actually think it was one of the weakest moments of the whole movie, where they're just like, oh, I killed him, and then my mission was... finished, so then I just went and met this family and was kind of like...
Yeah, what's the programming there? Like,
I never got the impression from Terminators, like, you know, your standard Terminator, that when they stop killing humans, they just go and are nice to humans and start building families.
Yeah.
Like, that never... that was actually... Those two moments were... I sort of forgot in my review those moments because they're my two least favorite moments of the movie. Like, that was stupid. Like, yeah, I just met this woman, and seeing I'd killed him, I felt like, you know, time to live my own life now. And you're like, what?
Like, how's Skynet programming these things? Like,
how are the... That's kind of, I think, was a real fail of the story, basically.
Yeah.
They could have made it much... Like, I thought Genesis explained it better. You know, like, how... Mm-hmm. He survived from, like, the 90s into the time of Terminator Genesis, you know? Like, he wasn't an evil version of himself. I thought that was a better explanation than this one explanation was, anyway.
Yeah.
Did you prefer Genesis to Dark Fate?
I haven't seen Genesis. It's the only Terminator movie I haven't seen.
Oh, it's not that bad. Like, honestly. Like, I mean, like...
Yeah, I remember, because the trailer stuff showed, like, the evil... John Connor Terminator, and I thought that would be pretty stupid. I don't think I didn't think Emilia Clarke is like a great actress, and it really just turned me off. But it's like I think I'd probably enjoy it more than Dark Fate.
You probably would. Look, we quite enjoyed it. Like, it's for a Saturday night movie with, like, low expectations, you'll probably have a good time, you know?
Yeah.
Now, the Lord of the Rings series from Amazon, I am looking very forward to this. It's got its season 2 order. season one production is apparently going on a 4 to 5 month hiatus. Is it 2020 that this Lord of the Rings series is launching?
I don't know. I haven't really been keeping tabs on it. I'm just, like, when it comes out, I'll check it, I'll see it.
Well,
but,
I'm doing my new thing on the Signal now, Lord of the Rings, because we're trying to get to the heart of the news stories now. Lord of the Rings Amazon series. Let's find out. I think it's 2020. 2020.
Yeah.
Next year, are you going to say 2020 or 2020? What are you doing?
I always did 2020.
Yeah, but I'm thinking I might go 2020.
I might do both. I don't know. I just kind of say whatever pops in my head, really.
I'm going to make a conscious decision, Connor. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to make a conscious fucking effort to do 2020 next year.
Then you go to 2021,
2022. 2027, 2028. It's getting hard to count. When can we start doing 28, 29, 30, 31? Like, well, surely at some point.
Yeah, true, because we did 92, 93.
Yeah. When can I start doing, like, you know, 21? It's 21, it's 22, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's got to be coming soon. It'll be in production. Oh, Jesus. So I'm on a – there's no official release date. It'll be in production in 2 years, but 2021 is the hope. But there are people who wish it was 2020. So, okay, that doesn't really answer the question. Like, but I guess it means that 2021 is what they're thinking. But they haven't actually announced when it's going to be. And they, what I do like is they reportedly signed a $250 million rights contract with the author's estate, which is great to see the Tolkien estate getting a, you know, big payday, a fat payday from this. Because famously he sold the film rights for a measly, like, £100 or something.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're going to be filming in New Zealand again as well. So, yeah,
interesting. Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we'll see. They've committed to producing 5 seasons of the Lord of the Rings series as part of the $250 million rights deal. So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, they're doing the second age, right? So that has, like, a definitive ending. So, you know, I guess that's, like, an advantage that they're...
Did you like my idea, which, like, I don't know if you were listening to me and Stu talking about it. I said you could do something in the first age with, like, a magical item. And you could do a season in the first age, and then in the second age you could have the magical item turning up and stuff like that. Like, you could move around the ages with, like, different missions and stuff. That was kind of my idea.
Maybe, but I think the first age is kind of too mythical to do on a TV series. Because, I mean, like, normal humans and elves are, like, gods pretty much compared to everyone that comes later. Like,
but the first age is pretty awesome. So, I used to read a lot about the first age back then.
Oh, it is. But I feel like it'd be hard to pull off in a TV series that'll also be doing, like, the second age, because there's just such a vast difference.
The second age is the age of Numenor.
Between them.
Numenor, the kings of Numenor, which I used to love. And at the end of the second age...
Gets absolutely wrecked.
it gets absolutely hammered. And then the descendants of Numenor found Gondor, yeah? Am I right?
Pretty much. Well, everyone, Elendil and Isildur and stuff, they're on a boat with all the others to go to, heaven or whatever. But they turn back because they don't want to do it. They don't want to challenge, essentially, God. So they, like, turn back, and they're the only ones that live from the big flood and stuff. Well, besides Sauron, who lives, because, you know, he's a bit of a cockroach like that.
He's a bit of a sneak. Well, he got in the ear of the final king, didn't he?
Yeah, he was pretty much behind it. Yeah. Like, he's the one who steered them there.
Because I think his name was, like...
And they're all doing, like, blood sacrifices to the...
His name was, like, Asford Faradon or something, and he was the final king.
Yeah.
He actually captured Sauron in a massive battle, and then he brought him back to, you know, Numenor, and then Sauron was kind of in his ear, and then he went to challenge the gods, didn't he? Isn't that the storyline?
That's like, yeah, I think Sauron surrendered himself.
Yeah. But, like,
or something.
But he beat him in a massive... He beat his army in a huge battle, from memory.
Maybe. I think so. Because there was a fair few things that happened in the Second Age. Because all these guys are so long-lived as well.
Yeah, well, they could live for hundreds of years, you know. Like, I mean, Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, he really... His bloodline...
Yeah, he's like 80.
Yeah, his bloodline is kind of diminished because... you know, the Numenor kings lived longer than the Gondor kings, because by the Gondor kings, the bloodline is a bit diluted, I think, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking wicked. Dude, I'll be honest, when I was a teenager, I read a lot of Lord of the Rings, like, extra material. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah. It's great. It's all great.
I got into it heavily. So enough that I can, you know, I still remember getting... Like, at a certain point, I had to be like, Dave, this isn't real. You're memorizing this shit like it's actual history. It blended in my mind, and I was like, you need to take a fucking break, man.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think that's kind of what he wanted. He created his own mythology and history.
Yeah.
And, like, a bunch of people still do that. I love the dwarves. The dwarves are my favorite race. Like, their history.
Yeah.
I love that history. It's like briefer than all the other histories, but it's so crazy and violent.
Well, they don't get enough play. Like, they're not mentioned enough by him, sort of thing. Like, they're around in the first
days. Yeah, because they weren't... Yeah, they were created by, like, the Smith Valar, I think.
Right.
So they weren't created like men and elves.
No.
They weren't, you know, these sort of divine beings.
No.
But I love their culture and everything.
Do you remember the archives at the back of the appendices at the back of Lord of the Rings about the war between the dwarves and the orcs?
Yeah, I really loved that stuff.
That was my favorite shit.
Yeah.
Like, they had this huge war. For people who aren't aware, they had a huge war that, like, was all underground and stuff. And, it was just a massive battle, basically.
Huge fight outside of Moria. And there was just so much death. Like,
yeah. Hardcore.
That they said they pretty much never do it again. Yeah.
Yeah, it was full on. Anyway, so look, this was funny. Kathleen Kennedy came out, and she does not read the room well at all. She was talking about, like, she was just babbling on in corporate speak about, like, you know, shit. And then she goes, it's not like we've got, like, hundreds of pages of comics. We don't have novels. We don't have comics. And it was like, seriously?
You're already mining from them anyway. You fucking witch. Like, Jesus.
But what I love is, like, she supposedly is the head of it. And you are right. Like, they do mine from this, and they could mine a lot more. But how is she not aware that's what they're doing? Like, how is
it?
Yeah, it's weird.
And mining's a generous word, like, because they've declared all of that non-canon, yet they're still taking stuff from it and just making, like, worse versions.
But also at the same time, as well as that, they're also still releasing new books and new comics. So they
actually are
doing that as well. Like it's like, I was kind of like, really, do you not at all know what's going on at all? Like, you're so top level. Like, how are you not aware that there are always comics? Like, Marvel, you know, through Disney, you have the comic book rights, and they've been pumping out comics since Disney acquired the property. And the same thing with the books. There's been plenty of books that have been released. Like, let alone the extended universe, whatever it was called, the legend stuff.
Yeah.
You've got new stuff as well. So, like, on both counts, you're wrong, Kathleen.
Yeah.
And she was trying to excuse the fact of, like, their fun story's really hard to come up with. She was trying to talk that away. Like, oh, it's not like in Marvel where they've got all these comic books and they can take stories from that. You know, we don't have that problem. we don't have that. We've got to make our own stories up, and it's really hard. Like, it was just really woeful, I thought. Like,
give her the boot.
Well, you think Jon Favreau might take over?
No, but I don't know.
I think there's potential for that.
I just don't like it.
What would you think if...
She's so full of shit. She is so full of shit. Yeah. Like,
well, I mean...
And this is not the only instance where she's been full of it either.
It's not even the first time she's made these comments. She made the news rounds a couple of years ago for making the same comments, and she's gone back and repeated herself again. So she hasn't learned at all. She just doesn't know how to read the room, I think. I think she doesn't genuinely understand the sheer level of angst within the Star Wars, you know, fan base at the moment, which is a pretty big fan base.
Maybe she's a robot.
Yeah,
she's like a corporate robot.
Well, like I think you shared it the other day, you know, They Live. You know, when sunglasses, like, I'm sure Bob Iger and her could potentially, Uncle Bob and her could potentially be, you know, alien robots of some kind. It wouldn't surprise me. Like, they're so money-driven, but, like, it's like, for people who are so money-driven, they don't put it, like, a pretty face on it, like, to sort of soften the blow to fans. No. They talk really corporate directly at the fans, and it's a real turn-off, you know? Like, that's where I think sometimes these kind of people behind the big brands, it really does pay, much though I find him fucking annoying. Kevin Smith, to his credit, doesn't corporate talk. You know, like,
yeah,
they need sort of that.
Does the opposite.
Yeah, he shills mercilessly, but, like,
yeah,
they need, like, that face to sell it to, because Kathleen Kennedy and Bob Iger, they talk about it as a money machine. And, like, you know, fans don't want to hear you talking about it like that all the time, kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
you need to kind of put a more human face. Like, I'm sorry, Kathleen and Bob, you're not human enough, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you've bartered your soul from the devil too long, and, like, you know, it's readily apparent kind of thing. It's
get more people like Kevin Smith who cry whenever a new Star Wars trailer
comes out. Don't get me wrong, Kevin Smith annoys the fuck out of me. He turned up in something the other day, and I was like, oh, God, really? Like, why are we constantly turning to Kevin Smith, who's produced so much like, mediocre content? And, like, honestly, you or I are as big a fan as Kevin Smith. Really, honestly. I think I'm as knowledgeable, I'm as enthusiastic, but, like, why do we always turn to Kevin Smith like he's the only one that can possibly explain the, you know, things to the fans? Like, there's got to be better people than him. Like, I don't even know what he turned up in, but it was like it brought a groan from me, you know, because it was so needless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know either, but, you know, it sounds about right.
Yeah.
Do you ever listen to his Fat Man on Batman podcast?
Oh, yeah, I don't mind listening to Kevin Smith. I certainly think Kevin Smith makes some good points. I just wish he wasn't.
He just cries so much.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Like,
he smokes a blunt and he just starts crying about something, like, literally, just like, oh, it's so good, it's so beautiful.
His fucking wife, basically. Can you imagine it? Like, he was blubbing his way through Aquaman. Like, what is there to cry about in Aquaman? Like, really, what is there to fucking cry about?
Seriously?
Like, yeah. Like, it's an okay movie, but, like, there's nothing potentially, you know, that shattering in Aquaman to make someone sob.
I've heard it's not like a deep movie or anything. I've heard it's just like a fun kind of action.
It is.
Movie.
It's fine. Like, don't get me wrong, but there's really no emotional heft to it. You know what I mean? I don't know. In some ways, he really annoys me. At other times in his podcast, every now and then he'll make some good points, and you're like, okay, well, at least Kevin Smith isn't completely, like, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. There's a Willow series in discussion. The Ron Howard, was it a Ron Howard movie? I think it was. He was talking about Willow TV series or film when he was doing Solo, but then obviously Solo underperformed. But now apparently the son, is it John Kasdan, the son of Larry Kasdan?
I don't know.
Well, John Kasdan, I believe, was highly involved in Solo along with Larry. And now they're potentially looking at a Willow series coming out, potentially a Disney Plus series.
I've never seen Willow, the movie.
Overrated. I've seen it. It's
okay.
I never thought it was that great, actually. Far preferred The Princess Bride, which came out around the same time.
You know, I always, obviously, I trash talk Star Wars a lot on this podcast, but I would like a Solo sequel. I'd watch it because I enjoyed the first one.
The movie?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I would.
It was fun. There was some really stupid stuff like, oh, we'll call you Han Solo. Oh,
that sucked really bad.
And, you know, oh, you need a nickname. How about Chewie? But, like, all, like, the really fun heist stuff and, like, all the double crossing and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I really liked all that. And I'd like to see, like, another movie about smuggling kind of adventures.
Well, I liked one thing I did like was they were trying to set up sort of, like, you know, things like the Boba Fett movie and sort of, like, you know, a bit of a universe of movies. And I was very excited coming out of Solo for that kind of more than some of the more clunky moments of Solo. But I rewatched it recently after talking to Jimmy Terzis, a big friend of the show, and I mean, I enjoyed it, like, you know. It's just fun. Yeah, I far prefer to The Last Fucking Jedi. Like, I will not watch. I will not watch Last Jedi again. Do you know what I mean? I will never watch it in my life. Whereas Solo, I mean, it's an enjoyable movie. I'd give it like a 6.5 out of 10, probably.
I think I gave it 2.5 stars, but like I do like it.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I just gave it 2.5 as like a as in out of 5, not out of 10. You know, I mean, like, just the whole – I like the whole climax where there was something like 4 double crosses in the climax, which I thought was great. Like,
yeah.
And Woody was good too.
Woody Harrelson was excellent in that movie. Excellent.
Yeah.
Absolutely excellent. No, it was a decent movie for sure. Now, have you heard about this? The Justice League Zack Snyder cut, the fabled Snyder cut, Snyder, Ben Affleck, and Gal Gadot all called for the release of it. They were retweeting like shit about the Snyder Cut. Interesting that guys like Ben Affleck and Gal Gadot are getting involved.
Especially Ben Affleck. Because I thought he was just trying to get away from the whole thing. But,
yeah, well,
you know.
I mean, I guess he, you know, he was going to write and direct Batman, so he had a lot to do with it, and then suddenly nothing to do with it.
Ben should have stayed. He was good. I liked Ben Affleck as Batman.
I liked him. I thought, you know, he was underserved at times by the storylines, but especially in Justice League, but, I mean, I enjoyed his portrayal. I wish we'd gone a bit deeper. I wish we'd gotten him writing and directing a movie like he wanted to do, you know, instead of that.
Instead of Batman v Superman, I just wanted like a world's finest movie. You know, I wanted like a team up movie.
Yeah.
Affleck and Catwoman. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, this whole Snyder Cut thing, I don't really care. I enjoy Justice League as it is. It obviously has problems, but I think a Snyder Cut would definitely be better because it would be consistent. You wouldn't go from like a Snyder film to a Whedon TV movie.
Yeah.
Which is really jarring.
Yeah, oh, very, so, very, very.
It would just be one consistent movie, which I think would be better. So I'd watch it if it came out. But
you know, Joss Whedon's contribution only kind of further made it more of a mixed-up movie than it probably already was, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, he did put it into the Pet Sematary line, which I liked, but other than that...
Yeah, it was just it was a strange kind of bastard of a movie, wasn't it? Really, it's
one of the worst things they did was get rid of. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're right.
I get too excited.
What was one of the worst things they did?
Oh, they got rid of Junkie XL and put who worked with Hans Zimmer on the previous two movies, and they put Danny Elfman on it. And as a result, we had one of the most forgettable scores of all time.
Yeah,
like,
true.
I really liked the... Say what you will about Batman v Superman and Man of Steel, but the soundtracks were amazing.
Yeah. I've been... Look,
and they were distinct.
Really,
they had their own themes.
Yeah, I really liked the ultimate cut of Batman v Superman. I've watched it many times. I think it had some really good moments. But, you are right. Junkie XL was excellent. And it was a shame.
His Wonder Woman theme was great, too.
Yeah.
They just got rid of like the Superman and Batman kind of themes and replaced them with like the old ones, but it wasn't really noticeable. And the Justice League theme was really forgettable. So
Justice League, that whole movie was a mess. In general, was forgettable though.
We could talk about it forever. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't really want to. You know, like I just feel like it's come and gone.
Yeah.
There's no need to keep talking about it, kind of thing. It's almost like it's yesterday's news. But, the Snyder Cut, I'd definitely watch it just to at least see what it was like. You know, I'd give it a try.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, we had some new comic book news. Robert Dean Vendetti has been announced as a new writer for Justice League with Brian Hitch on covers. First up, Justice League versus the Eradicator and an army of Daxonites. Where are you on this? I know you're a bit of a Superman kind of guy, so the Eradicator's kind of your cup of tea, yeah? Or at least you're familiar with him.
I like the Eradicator, but the Eradicator they had in Rebirth with Tomasi was... the Eradicator himself wasn't bad. It was the Superman John crap. But I don't know. It sounds like a cool idea, Eradicator and a bunch of Daxamites running around, but not enough for me to check out
Justice League,
the book. Yeah, I'll check it out if I see some previews or something.
I'll definitely check out the first couple of issues of Justice League because I'm a big Justice League kind of junkie, basically. I love Justice League.
Probably covering it on here, I guess. So
what was that? Sorry,
we'd probably end up covering it on here, I guess. So I guess I would check it out.
We'll do the first couple of issues at least, just to kind of get a feel and see what it's like. David M. Walker and John Timms are joining Young Justice creative team in February. I believe they're going to be co-writing with Bendis. David F. Walker. So
I have no idea what Young Justice is like at the moment, but David F. Walker did. I believe he did a Power Man and Iron Fist run, which is pretty shocking.
That's funny.
It wasn't very good.
I mean, I'm friends with him on Facebook, but I'm not super familiar with his work. Is he the guy who does quite a bit of stuff to do with Shaft? I think he did. David F.
Probably.
Yeah, I think that's where I know him from. I think he's done quite a few comic book adaptations of Shaft. Disney have announced a bunch of new release dates for untitled Marvel projects. God, I won't bore everyone with like reading out the dates, but basically they extend from October 7, 2022 to November 3, 2023. So five movies, untitled so far, but I mean, you know, we're going to, I guess we'll find out and see as it goes along. We're going to see probably Black Panther 2 for sure, Captain Marvel 2. I don't know if these have already been announced. Doctor Strange, obviously, you know. There's plenty of stuff coming out from Marvel. I know you're a bit cooler on it than me, aren't you?
Yeah, just a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a couple of things I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange sequel, probably the most.
I'm looking forward to that. I'm actually going to say this. I actually wouldn't mind seeing a Captain Marvel sequel as well. Like, and I'm not her biggest fan or anything, but, like, I think it could have potential. You know what I mean? Like, I think they could go...
They're not doing a sequel?
Oh, no, they are. Definitely are doing a sequel, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying I that's one I would look forward to. More than I look forward to, for example, Falcon and Winter Soldier TV show. I'm, like, really trying to work out if I want to watch that or not, you know?
Yeah, it seems really boring.
it just seems dull, you know, like really seems dull. Now, the Charlie's Angels movie, the reboot, flopped, and Elizabeth Banks, who was a star and also the director and I think even a writer on the project, she had quite a bit to say about this. She was saying Captain Marvel owes its success to coming from a male genre. She did attempt to pad her statements by wishing superhero film success. By the way, I'm happy for those characters to have box office success, she said, referring to Wonder Woman, Captain Marvel, etc. But we need more women's voices supported with money because that's the power. The power is in the money. I mean, she's not wrong she's not wrong about the power being in the money, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Captain Marvel made a fucking billion. You don't consider that enough support? Yeah. Like, and don't get me... It's a male genre, seriously?
Yeah.
Like, for God's sake, you had... you know, my friend Rebecca, you had Natasha on last week.
Yes.
You know, she loves those movies.
She's a huge fan. She's a massive fan.
Hell, she likes them more than me. So, you know, it's definitely not a male genre. It's so stupid.
Yeah. I think she was trying to downplay her, basically, you know, box office failure on Charlie's Angels. Charlie's Angels, though, really only had one bankable star in, what's her name? God, what's the name from Twilight? I always forget her name.
Kristen Stewart.
Kristen Stewart,
I haven't seen any advertising for Charlie's Angels, so I think that might have...
I saw a couple of trailers, but I don't think they gave it the full, you know, sort of treatment.
Plus, more people are interested in superhero movies because they're the thing right now. They're what action movies were in the 80s. Like, they're what's hot.
Yeah.
Charlie's Angels probably isn't hot right now.
Yeah.
There's not like a huge outcry in waiting for Charlie's Angels.
She was funny. She was saying you've had 27 Spider-Man movies and you didn't complain. And people did make the point that there were a lot of people complaining when they kept rebooting Spider-Man. There was quite a lot of fan discontent and media reaction to doing another Spider-Man. So that was actually part of the conversation when it was announced. So that annoys me when people try to feed that narrative because it was like, actually, plenty of people did make those comments, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, it is what it is. This is cool. Kevin Conroy is suiting up as the Kingdom Come Batman in Crisis on Infinite Earths and CW. So Kevin Conroy is officially suiting up as Batman, man.
Yeah.
I think that's badass.
Yeah, it's cool. And it works with Kingdom Come Batman because he's obviously...
old,
you know, he's not physical anymore. So it's definitely Kingdom Come Batman.
Mm. Yeah, it definitely.
Right,
is,
that's interesting. You know, I know you hate Routh, but
pathetic.
Like, I am looking forward to seeing his Kingdom Come Superman.
Yeah.
Obviously, I feel like Henry Cavill and Christopher Reeve both would have been much better Kingdom Come Superman, but. You know, he looks good in the costume from the stills we've seen lately.
Yeah.
And he's definitely going to be better than Tyler Hoechlin, because Tyler Hoechlin sucks. There is not a Superman worse than Tyler Hoechlin.
That being said,
I hate him. He's awful. Mm. But, I mean, he does have a following, and he does have people who enjoy him who just want the simpler kind of Superman. But
like the Orshak Superman kind of thing, is it?
Yeah, I think he's just trying to do a Reeven impersonation too much,
right.
Or like they're trying to go for that tone with him, and it's like Reeve pulled that off, but you shouldn't try and emulate it. Do your own. Like every Superman has done their own thing.
Yeah,
George Reeves is very different to Christopher Reeve. Christopher Reeve is very different to Dean Cain. Dean Cain's very different to Henry Cavill, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't really emulate each other. No. But yeah, he's really bad. I hate him, and he's getting his own show, but hopefully
Superman and Lois,
you know,
I believe.
Hopefully it'll have better writing, which I doubt, but I just hope they don't just make it more Donna movie stuff. But anyway, back to my point, sure. I get the feeling they need to kill a Superman off, and I really hope it's not the Kingdom Come Superman, because, you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to be much better than Tyler Hoechlin's Superman. He's what? The... Like, I think a lot of people who are excited about Crisis are excited about Kingdom Come Superman. Like,
okay.
He's done a lot for their marketing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Brandon Routh is actually leaving Legend tomorrow as well. He announced that it was his...
Yeah.
He did his final scenes. So, I mean, I personally think he's terrible. Like, but he's probably better as Superman than as the Atom. The Atom was just awful. Like, I don't know. But he himself has a really cheesy fucking style, you know? Like, his style of acting in Legends of Tomorrow is just cheesy. Like, tries to be comedic kind of thing, you know?
I mean, if you'd put a comparison, though, sure you'd compare his style to Superman Returns, if we're talking about his Kingdom Come Superman.
But I'd say forgettable. Forgettable. Like,
yeah,
blank.
Yeah, fair. But it wasn't cheesy.
No, it wasn't.
Like, the tone of Returns, like, the story was bad, but the tone, you know, that would... Yeah. It is kind of a tone that would work for a Kingdom Come sort of.
Yeah, I didn't mind Superman Returns. I thought it was a failure, but it was kind of like a noble failure. I thought there were bits and pieces of it that were interesting, you know.
It's beautifully shot, and that's about it.
Yeah,
true. But that means you could just get drunk and like put it on in the background and just look at it and drool. I don't know.
No, I get your point. I get your point. Look, I'm going to watch this Crisis on Infinite Earth, so I'm going to tune in for sure. And watch this shit and see what they actually fucking do. Henry...
It's so tough to get through.
Yeah, I know.
The CW stuff. So Ray and I just watch it together.
Yeah.
So with Elseworlds, Ray and I just watch it together over Facebook chat because I need to scream. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, you guys are really... It's a real team up, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, we're teaming up on this. I can't take the weight by myself.
I like it, man.
I need to team up with someone to watch it.
I like it a lot. Henry Cavill, by the way, said, I've not given up on Superman. He also gave his thoughts on Man of Steel and BVS, which he both approved of, and then he said Justice League didn't work. So Henry Cavill, that's his first official statement in quite some time about this, you know?
It's his first official, like, it pretty much is his first official statement. He has finally spoken because he's saying, I want to be Superman. I haven't given up. The cape's still mine. And he said, I'm not going to sit here in the dark while all this stuff is going on. So I'm guessing this is a negotiation tactic with his agent. Because we all know him and the guy who did Mission Impossible Fallout, they did a pitch for a Superman movie
to
Warner Brothers, which got rejected.
Christopher McQuarrie,
And their pitch got directed. I wish it got directed. No, it got rejected. And it's like, what? You tell me that pitch wouldn't have been better than, you know, I don't know, it's still, Justice League.
I hear your point, Like, I mean, I actually think he's pretty good at Superman, he just needs to be given the right material. You know, he needs better material. Christian Bale apparently turned down Batman 4. Bale and Christopher Nolan were apparently offered a fourth Dark Knight movie. I mean, this is common knowledge, which they walked away from. This... Like, Nolan said this before himself.
Yeah, they said that while they were making BVS and while they're making Man of Steel. Like, in fact, you know, Nolan's finishing contributions to the DC was co-writing Man of Steel. That was like the last thing he did, and then
he exited.
Left to do Interstellar.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
no, not Interstellar. That was earlier.
No, you're around the you know, if not exactly, that is pretty much what happened. Interesting though. I think the story was they were trying to say that Bale rejected it when he was just given a solo offer, but I think Bale is very much part of that package where he'd done his three movies.
He wouldn't do it without Nolan.
Yeah, I think he liked the critical praise that came with the Nolan movies in general. Felt that he'd, you know, done his best work on Batman in those three movies. Why would he want to stay? I'm sure they threw a lot of money at him, but I mean, he's a busy actor, Christian Bale. He gets around.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, he does.
Chadwick Boseman wants nothing to do with the Marvel Disney Plus series. He basically, quote, said, I'm not even at all interested in being on TV. It was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
He just basically flat batted and said, not any interest at all in being on a Disney Plus TV show. Goodbye. He's coming off Black Panther. Why would he go to TV? You know, like, he's happy to, you know, there's a sequel movie coming, and then I assume he wants to do other work outside of it. Whereas the guys who are doing Winter Soldier and Falcon, they're not quite the same level of pop that Chadwick Boseman had on him in Black Panther.
No.
So.
Yeah.
Scream 5 rumor. I'm a big fan of the Scream series. We're actually going to be doing some of the Scream movies on Cinema of Doom. Scream 5 rumor reports the original cast is being pursued for casting, not pursued in the movie. So, do you like Scream? Do you like Scream?
I've seen the first one.
Okay.
It's okay. I get what it's going for.
Yeah.
It's not quite my cup of tea, but I do like Wes Craven.
I love Wes Craven.
Absolutely. I think we talked about this, actually, though. I really like New Nightmare.
Yes, and I want to watch New Nightmare, actually. Yeah. I've actually now got it to watch, so I might actually watch it tonight. Paramount Pictures is reportedly in final talks with Fargo and Legion creator and showrunner Noah Hawley to write and direct the next Star Trek movie, which he'll also produce. And apparently it's going to be casting it's Chris Pine, you know, whatever the fucking guy whose name is, plays Spock. And all those guys. So it's going to be a continuation of the series that JJ did.
Yeah. So I'm a huge, huge Star Trek, the original series guy. I love Captain Kirk. I love Spock. I love Bones.
Sure.
Those first two Abrams movies were fucking terrible Star Trek movies. They were really, especially Into Darkness is like Last Jedi level of how
terrible
bad movie. You can do Star Trek.
Fell asleep.
And it's funny because JJ
asleep in Gold Class. Fell asleep in Gold Class during the movie. Really, really.
And Abrams, I mean, for God's sake, Abrams said while he was making Star Trek, I was never a Star Trek guy. It's too philosophical for me. Then don't do Star Trek because that's what it is.
Yeah.
But Simon Pegg did good work on. Star Trek Beyond.
Okay, I've never watched it. It's
much better than the first two because the characters actually act more like the characters from the original series.
Yeah.
Kirk isn't just some frat boy. He's like a measured captain.
Yeah.
You know, Bones and Spock have a great dynamic in that. And it was pretty good. I enjoyed Star Trek Beyond. I enjoyed it enough that I was disappointed that there was no sequel. And if they're doing a sequel with those characters.
Yes.
I would look forward to it, and I would hope they stick with the route they're going and not go back to the J.J. Abrams action, everyone's a caricature of themselves.
Yeah, that was very much style. What it was, wasn't it?
Have you seen, are you into the old Star Trek?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Shatner. I've seen tons of the Star Trek in my time.
Sweet.
My favorite Star Trek is Next Generation, because that's kind of what I got into when I was at uni. That's actually what got me into Star Trek. But no, the original series, the original two series especially, are fantastic. And I'm a massive William Shatner fan. Like, oh, yeah, there's a lot to like about the original series and Next Generation. And I actually regret it's not much of a regret. I'm saying this like it's going to be deep. It's not. I regret not watching Deep Space Nine when it was coming out, like, because I watched all the Next Generation. And a couple of big mates of mine kept saying, you've got to watch Deep Space Nine. You've got to watch Deep Space Nine. I never did. And I did watch a fair chunk of Voyager, which I felt was not that great, but was okay. But I sort of slowly fell out of the franchise. But at one point in my life, I was watching a lot of Star Trek, yeah.
Yeah, man, like that original series. Like, I've watched it's magical, man. It's so good. And it's how much stuff is it predicted, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Tablets, you know, all that jazz. And, like, Captain Kirk is one of my favorite performances on television, fantastic. Like, ever. Like, you know, everyone always makes fun of him hamming it up when he's evil and stuff, but he's had some really genuine, subtle moments in that show. He's, like, one of my favorite fictional leaders.
Oh, Captain Kirk's amazing.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite characters. And so when they do, like, they turn Kirk into, like, this hot-headed frat boy.
Sure.
That was just, like, sacrilege.
It's a very one-dimensional performance that Chris Pine gives as Captain Kirk.
I recommend checking out Beyond, because Pine's very good as Kirk in Beyond. I think he's, like, a worthy successor. He's not Shatner level, but, you know.
I'd check it out for sure.
And Spock is much better as well. He's not some angry teenager that's yelling, Khan, throwing and punching.
Yeah, I didn't like Spock at all. And I didn't like Spock at all in the new movies at all. Actually,
Spock was terrible in the new movies.
Someone I did like was the guy who plays Bones, Carl Urban.
Oh, Carl Urban. Yeah, Bones has been great in all the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's actually used a lot more in Beyond.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Oh, Carl Urban, what a guy, right? EMR in Lord of the Rings.
Dredd.
Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Now Bones.
Yeah, and he's still talking about potentially coming back to do Dredd in the TV series.
Oh, I would. Man, that. I'm really looking forward to that Dredd TV series. Oh, now, if they got Carl Urban back.
Jesus, I'm more than looking forward to it, dude. I feel like flying over to where they're going to be shooting it and watching, you know, them do it, like prowling around the set. Honestly. Don't get me started on Judge fucking Dredd. I love Dredd so much, man. Like, Jesus Christ.
I've got the first three. Oh, we won't get started on it,
No. What were you going to say? You've got the first three what?
Oh, I've got the first three case files.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've read the first one.
Yep.
And I haven't started two yet, which two starts off with Cursed Earth.
Great series. Dude, I've got...
I don't know if you'd want to do... Cursed Earth on the Signal at some point.
I would love to do Cursed Earth on the Signal. I've got, dude, get this, I've got the first 16 case files on my shelves.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
I'm a big...
They're so good.
Yeah, they're really good, and it only gets better. Dude, I'm a big, big Dredd guy. For sure. Oh, I love Judge Dredd, man. Yeah.
I think my first exposure was, like, a bigger story Steve Dillon drew.
Yes.
It was, like, the end of the Mutant Saga or something.
Right.
And they were in the future... I think Fred and Anderson, and that's what like, kind
Damned.
Of got me called.
City of the Damned.
Yeah. So, they're so cheap, those case files.
Do you want to do Cursed Earth next week? Or we can do Cursed Earth next week if you want.
Oh, if you want to, man, sure.
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah, for sure, man. Oh, fuck yeah.
Sweet.
I haven't read it in years, dude. I've got it in case files. I've also got, like, the Titan graphic novel that I bought, like, back in the fucking 90s. I'll pull that off the shelf, that bad boy. Oh, yeah, man. Cursed Earth's awesome, dude. Good. That was the first epic that they did in Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Before that it was
I think the one where he's a sheriff on the moon.
Yes.
I think that kind of counts as an epic, right? But it's not like the first proper one.
No, Cursed Earth was the first one where they were like, we're gonna do like a 12-parter or something.
Yeah.
And then they did Judge Child Quest as well, was also a long one.
Cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, oh, awesome. Man, I had a few options of what I was going to do. Another that I was thinking of was Hawks of Outrema, which is a comic book adaptation of a Robert E. Howard storyline.
Really?
Yeah. I've been thinking about doing that, but we'll do Cursed Earth for next week because that excites me.
Sure.
Frank Miller is suing ex-wife Lynn Varley. Lynn Varley famously was his colorist for sort of the early to mid part of his career, and his wife. And then, unfortunately, they split up, and, you know, she stopped working. But she was, like, the colorist on, like, Ronan, you know, Dark Knight Returns.
Okay.
And
Yeah.
And it's he's alleging that she's been trying to sell sort of rough sketches and stuff, like sort of, I don't know what you call it, but sort of like concept drawings and stuff like that, like under the table. So they're currently fighting it out of the courts. Because it's Frank Miller, it's actually quite valuable. You know, like stuff from back in the 80s and stuff, like, you know, stuff where he was doing concept drawing for, say, Ronan or Dark Knight Returns, like original artwork.
Yeah.
And he's alleging that she's been selling it through dealers in the States, like under the table sales. So, yeah. It's sad because, like, she was, you know, like if you look at those early Frank Miller works, she's on all of them, you know, as the colorist and was his wife. The Batman cast John Turturro, is that how you say his name, or John Turturro? As crime boss
Carl. I don't know.
Well, he's the guy. He's in Transformers, I believe. He's a good actor. And he's been cast as crime boss Carmine Falcone. So I guess this is pointing more to the Long Halloween kind of rumors, do you think?
Maybe Long Halloween would be cool. I mean, they kind of did the bit of Long Halloween in The Dark Knight. Elements of it anyway.
Wasn't Carmine Falcone he was in like Batman Begins, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think did they recast? I don't know, I can't remember, but I mean, it's good casting. He's Italian American, so that's probably what you want, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. Now this is interesting. According to Business Insider, Stargirl the series will screen on DC Universe streaming service while also appearing in Crisis on Infinite Earths. So basically, they're saying that the Stargirl series will reportedly air on CW during an exclusive window. So it's going to show on DC Universe app and then a day later show on the CW, and she's going to be introduced in the Crisis on Infinite Earths in a very brief scene, apparently.
Mm.
I mean, I'm looking forward to this Stargirl series. It's going to bring in a lot of the Justice Society and stuff. And I think it's pointing more and more to the fact that they're going to be moving away from the DC Universe app. I don't think the DC Universe app has a long life, really.
I just hope the shows continue.
Me too. Me too. Like, Titans, dude, good show, you know?
The past few episodes have been terrible, Dave. Just prepare yourself.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think episode 10 to 12 have just been shitty.
Why? What's gone wrong?
They're just boring and full of really lame melodrama. Oh, like, not much is happening. And it's like, oh, lovers, quarrels, and stuff.
How's my favorite, Minka Kelly? In it much?
Yeah, she is. But it's all, like, angsty shit.
She's so hot, man. I'm going to say it on the show right now. She's incredibly beautiful. I was looking at some pictures of her the other day on the internet, and I was like, my God, she's stunning. You know?
Does your wife listen to these podcasts?
No, she doesn't. And, like, even so, she wouldn't be surprised. Like, yeah, Minka Kelly really is my, one and only, basically. I'll say that right now. But you're saying that it's had a real downfall in quality, yeah?
Yeah. Next week's season finale, so hopefully that'll pick things up.
Okay. Oh, well. Interesting. I am interested. Because, I mean, I've generally been pretty excited by what they've done, so that's disappointing to hear that it's taken a downturn.
Yeah, but, I guess you'll see,
You can't hit winners every single time, man,
That's true.
Is there much Superboy in crypto?
They're in it a bit.
Mm.
After his episode, past couple of episodes, he hasn't really been in it at all.
Okay.
Because of stuff that's happening, but he's had some good moments.
Did you see they unveiled the Nightwing costume at some DC event? Yeah. By the way, it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks fine. The explanation for Nightwing is really stupid, though.
Well, wasn't the original explanation that he just wanted to get out of Batman's shadow and wanted to be his own?
As in, like, the... Because I think Chuck Dixon carried it over from the Silver Age, like, the original explanation for the Nightwing symbol. It was like this... Essentially, like, it was a hybrid of Kryptonian culture and Batman inspiring him.
Yeah.
But in the... They changed the background for the Nightwing explanation of, like, the name and stuff for the TV show. And it's pretty bad. It's like, really? That's what you came up with?
Yeah. Sometimes it's sad how clunky the sort of live adaptations are when the source material is a bit richer, I find.
Yeah, it was a very boring, bland one, and it was also stupid.
Whereas, I'm going to impress you with something here. I know that back in the day, in like World's Finest, I think, that Batman and Superman would go to Kandor City and fight as Nightwing and Flamebird. Am I right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Man, I'd love to grab that World's Finest Silver Age omnibus. There'd be a lot of fun stuff in there.
Dude, I've got it. I think I've got the first...
Oh, do you?
Yeah, nice. I do. We sort of did the first trade collection of it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'd happily do another one for sure.
Sweet.
I like that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not saying that it like super holds up, but it's like my Justice League Bronze Age. It's pretty fucking good stuff when you dig into it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just good. I don't know. I have a real soft spot for those times. You know, my heart belongs to the 50s. What can I say?
The Silver Age was it was so colourful. There were so many ideas, and they just went crazy with stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
You could kind of do it now, though. I feel like they do it now, but they just do it worse. Like, I sometimes feel like the art's not as good, the ideas are all a bit played out, and it just doesn't feel as kind of classic, you know? That's the problem. It's not that they don't try. They do try. But, like, they just don't sort of do it as well. I don't know. It's weird.
I think All-Star Superman's probably an exception.
Oh.
Because that was very Silver Age.
That was fantastic, though.
In fact, Grant Morrison in general brings back Silver Age elements in a lot of his stories. He pulls it off. Geoff Johns doesn't really pull it off, but he has been,
Yeah.
He does dabble in that.
Yeah, but Grant Morrison is massively successful with it. But I feel like you'll often read an issue of comics and you're like, I can see what they're trying to do. You know, points for trying, but like it's almost like they're not original enough themselves. I don't know.
A lot of the comics I enjoy that come out these days, I'm enjoying because it's like, hey, points for trying. Not that it's actually, you know, anything special.
Michael Moorcock's Elric character, this was a big, big character for me when I was growing up, is headed to TV. They've tried to do a few reboots of him over the years, like he was almost a film series of the 70s at various things. But like this is, you're probably not familiar with Elric, I imagine. It's pretty neat.
I know of him.
Yeah. He's kind of like a Sorcerer King. An albino Sorcerer King who sort of is in a fantasy, kind of almost like a Conan world. And he gets his powers sort of by drugs, really, like herbs and stuff that he eats. Because he's kind of like, he sort of weakens. He's not a vampire, but he sort of gets really full of battle lust and sort of feeds off his sword. But then he'll weaken and he has to ingest these kind of drugs to keep him going. Pretty interesting character. Turns up in some Conan and it's really bad. Like, in all honesty.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow. Like, dude, like, it's like whoever, like, they've got him in this pointy hat. It's really fucking bad. And as an Elric fan, I was embarrassed. You know, like, I was like, man, this is, like, the lamest Elric I've ever seen. Like, Elric is kind of, in my mind, was, I don't know, he's just more of a fucking, like, hard, he's just more of a, like, hack and slash merchant. And in these things, he's kind of like a Dungeons and Dragons wizard. And he's just, he's just like, what the fuck's going on? And anyway, but, like, I am excited for him to go to TV. But I want to turn to something. Legend of the comic book industry, Alan Moore, had some things to say. And I'm going to read out a quote Alan Moore has on superhero movies, and I want to get your comments on this. This is Alan Moore's quote. The continuing popularity of these movies to me suggests some kind of deliberate self-imposed state of emotional arrest combined with a numbing condition of cultural stasis that can be witnessed in comics, movies, popular music, and indeed right across the cultural spectrum, Moore said, mincing not a single word. Wow, and he even had more to say after that, but it didn't get any better for comic book movies. What do you say to Alan Moore, dude? He just kind of drilled it in and just told it like he saw it, man.
Look, he's an angry man yelling at clouds. Like,
of course he is.
I mean, he said, like, I read, I reread, you know, Twilight of the Superheroes.
Sure.
Well, I reread his pitch and stuff for that. It was very interesting stuff. And, you know, he was... he's just changed. He's very bitter because obviously he used to not think like this.
Sure.
Or he wants his superhero things to be challenging or to teach the reader something.
Right.
But God, it's harsh. It's harsh because it's like, you know, dude, maybe people just want to go to the movies and have a good time.
Yeah.
All right. You know, man, like maybe they do want to switch off the outside world and just watch, you know, Thor beat up stuff for like 2 hours, you know, let them do it.
Like, how challenging does it really have to be? Like how challenging? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you have, that's one of the things that's superhero drama. You do have challenging stories and then you have light stories and same with the movies.
Do you think he's just a bit kind of like grumpy and old kind of thing? Do you think he's just a bit sort of over it?
I think he's definitely grumpy and old, and he really got screwed by DC as well.
Yes.
But the, you know, he's entitled to his opinion, but maybe he should just stop being so angry about this stuff. And this is coming from me. I'm a pretty big hypocrite, I guess, because of Star Wars, but like, I don't know, man, just chill out.
Yeah, look, funnily enough, I at times can see his point, but I just think he takes it like way too seriously. Like,
we're not in Brave New World right now where everyone's taking Soma and living in these, you know, and every single movie is, like, completely safe and stuff and we're living in these domes. Like, we're not there yet, so.
We'll get there, but not yet.
Yeah, we will get there.
I'm just sort of like, man, it feels like you're always saying this shit too. Like, and funnily enough, like, I honestly rate some of Alan Moore's stuff that I've read. Like, we talked about 2000 AD. His Halo Jones that he did for 2000 AD is so brilliant. And that's before, like, Watchmen and before fucking V for Vendetta And, like, his Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen is so cool, too. Like, I just kind of... And he's Tom Strong, I love. It just saddens me that someone who's produced work that I really kind of, like, loved. You know what I mean? Like, it made an impact on me. And it didn't make me question my fucking life. But I was like, this is great comic book work. You know, like, genuinely great. It saddens me that the guy behind it's just so fucking bitter, man. Like, he's just so down on fucking life.
I know that feeling exactly. He wrote my second favorite Superman story of all time.
Yeah.
And I love like his works and what he's done with the character and what he said about the character.
Yeah.
And now he's just like shitting on everything.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like you said, like, dude, is it really worth it? Like, you know, like, not all these movies are all that bad. Like, some of them are fucking shockingly bad. But, like, they're not all that bad. You know, like, is Avengers Endgame really that bad? Like, I don't think it is. Yeah. I think it's pretty good. You know, like, I don't know. But, like, this is his life now, man. He snipes, dude. And, yeah, he was screwed, but, like, so are most creators. So was Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, you know?
Well, so, they outright, like, started cursing people.
Yeah, most comic book creators were flat out screwed. Bill Finger died penniless, you know?
He should, you know, like when he comes out with quotes that talk about the industry and how creators are getting screwed, because he does come out with those quotes and I find them much more interesting and relevant, and I wish he'd talk about that stuff more.
Yeah.
You know, about how, like, you know, people like Jack Kirby need more recognition and stuff.
He took a potshot in this, that reminds me, in this quote, there was more to it. He was saying, like, these comic book creators say all this stuff about heroism, but none of them have shown any creative courage in standing up to their masters and getting better deals. Mm. They're creative cowards. Like, this is like... He was really, like, he was lashing...
Jeez, was he on the sauce at the time, or...?
I don't know, man. He was just really... He was really fucking having a go, man. Like, he was...
Yeah.
Deep into his cups, maybe. I don't know. Like, but to be honest, like, much though I admire him, I just get the feeling, like, spending a day with him would be a bit much, you know? Like,
yeah.
I kind of be like, dude, if we can't talk about, like, fucking, you know, at least... Like,
your work without you going onto a huge rant about everything.
I would at least like to shake his hand and say thank you for Halo Jones. You know what I mean? Because it was so inspirational to me as a teenager. I'd just like to say, in all fairness, mate, thank you for that. Like, leaving everything else off the table. Like for example, his Man Who Has Everything is probably one of my most favorite Superman stories. I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to thank him for that, but I don't want him to call me a man-child for enjoying it.
Yeah, if he spun around and was, like, saying all that shit, I'd just be kind of like, dude, I'm leaving, man. Like, I don't need it, you know? Anyway, well, I just thought we'd cover it. Thor has a new look. Adam the Computer sent this to me. It's fucking terrible. Have you seen the new look of Thor with his new haircut?
I tried to find it, but I couldn't.
Well, I'll send you the picture after the show, man. It's fucking bad. It's really bad. Like... Adam the Computer, he's an absolute legend, some of the stuff he gets, man. Like, he's deep on the fucking web. He'll send me stuff, because obviously he's on US time, so I'll wake up to it. And I just saw it, and I'm like, what the fuck is this, man? Like, it's just not good. I'm trying to find out what we're talking. Yeah, I've just found it. I'm going to send this to you right now. It's not good. But, like, thank you to Adam the Computer for basically, you know, doing it. Like, he goes the extra distance, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing that I think makes the Signal fantastic, that we get guys and girls who, you know, they'll send me news items, you know what I mean? Like, they'll send stuff, and it's like, here you go, I've just flicked it across to you. And, like, imagine waking up to that dude, like what I've just sent you on Facebook. Like, and I'm like, that's Thor?
Only in the 90s?
Yeah, like, like, who the fuck thought that should be a good Thor costume? Like, whoever greenlit that at Marvel, I'm going to say... should fucking leave their position in shame. Like, it's very poor. It's very poor. You know, it's about as low as it goes on the totem pole. Anyway.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Shopping with Dave and Connor. I've only got three things this week. Two of them are issues, and we're going to cover these issues next week. Conan 2099, issue one, one shot. I'm very apprehensive, but...
Who's writing it?
No idea. Absolutely no idea, mate. We can hit our old friends at Google. Let's type it in. Conan 2099. I hope it's Jason Aaron, but I don't think it is. I really think it's not Jason Aaron. I just think it's interesting that they're doing this. Like, they're just they're kind of, you know, going in that direction. Okay, blah, 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 editor-in-chief, writer. Oh, writer Jerry Duggan, who I do like.
Okay. Nice. He's good.
Jerry Duggan and penciler Roge Antonio. So, yeah, I'm checking it out.
Cool.
So then we've got a book, The Philosophy of Deadpool, hardcover. Now, I know nothing about this, but it sounds interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to Google it, and then I'm like, oh, no, Dave will know what it is, so I just didn't Google it. But
no, I don't know what it is, and I just saw it on the, you know, the King's Comics, basically newsletter, and just thought, what an interesting title for something. Like, so I wonder if it's like, you know, image, like kind of a best of kind of thing of like him saying stuff in his career. You know what I mean? Like, you know, kind of like a coffee table book. I think so.
Serious. It's like a Uncover the Wiles and Insights of the Merc with a Mouth in this lavishly presented collection of Deadpool's best, worst, and frankly outrageous moments from his comic book history. Uncover the Wiles and Insights of the Merc with a Mouth in this lavishly presented collection of Deadpool's best, worst, and frankly outrageous moments from comic book history. So it collects a bunch of what looks like covers, comic book covers, and scenes from the comics.
Right.
So, and it seems like it's 25 Australian bucks, which isn't too bad. I'm not sure if it's something I would...
It's only 121 pages.
I'm just quite curious as to what they would have in there.
Yeah, well, it's only 121 pages, so it's not big.
Yeah.
I always like to look at... I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. I always like to have a look at the page count. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To get some sort of an idea of what we're... getting it. Funnily enough, in the Amazon categories, they've got it in erotica graphic novels, which I'm sure is a mistake. You know, like Amazon misclassified that, or whoever's put it in have misclassified that. I highly doubt it's got any pornography in it.
Maybe.
Well, maybe it does, but I'll be surprised, you know. In this lavishly presented guide to everyone, discover what makes the katana-wielding, gun-toting, insult-firing anti-hero tick or talk. Includes the greatest comic book covers and scenes we love to remember or wish we could forget, accompanied by the manic musings of our morally confused crimson-clad comrade.
It all depends what they choose, really, because there's a lot of good, but there's also a lot of bad, so...
Yeah. Hey, by the way, have you read Cosmic Ghost Rider?
No.
Because I'm thinking that might be another one we might do on the Signal, because Adam the Computer was saying, you know, I really enjoyed Cosmic Ghost Rider in that book we did recently.
Okay. Oh, well, I heard the Ghost Inner Demons say that it was bad. I think it was Inner Demons.
No, they like Cosmic Ghost Rider. They hate.
But they didn't like the series.
Cosmic Ghost Rider kills the Marvel Universe. They hate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, the guy who did Johnny Cates. That's right. Last week with Natasha, we did Guardians of the Galaxy, and Cosmic Ghost Rider's in it. And I like some of his scenes a lot. And Adam the Computer is saying, go and check out the Cosmic Ghost Rider series that Donny Cates wrote. So that's on my schedule for upcoming, you know, like upcoming episodes. Dude, I'm fucking pumped that we're going to be doing Cursed Earth next week.
Pretty excited.
And so the final thing for Shopping with Dave and Connor from me is the Punisher 2099 one-shot as well. I'm a big fan of the original Punisher 2099 from the day. And we're going to do both these issues next week, obviously. Have you got anything in Shopping that, you know, caught your eye?
I didn't see anything.
No,
I couldn't think of anything. Was it quite I would have done like the Philosophy of Deadpool, but, it was already on there. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's weekly comics. We've only got three comics this week. First one up, He-Man. And the Masters of the Multiverse. I'm sadly a He-Man fan from my childhood. It really is quite fucking sad. Like, I can
Why
never
is it sad?
Quite shake. Well, only because the reason it's sad is because I can, like, I never know if I really enjoy it or if I was just brainwashed as a kid. Do you know what I mean?
Like, right.
I just can never, like, for example, this issue, I enjoyed the classic He-Man stuff. But the more kind of alternate versions came in. I sort of enjoyed this comic, though. I thought the art was pretty good. It was crazy. But that was kind of part of the fun. I gave it 7 out of 10. I actually thought this was a pretty interesting comic. What did you think? And are you a He-Man fan?
So, I'm not a He-Man fan. I know nothing about He-Man aside from the fact that he goes by the power of Grayskull and turns into He-Man.
By the
and
power there's a dude of Grayskull. Called Skeletal.
Yeah, and his enemy's called Skeletal. That's all I know about him. So I went into this. I was initially very confused.
Sure.
But I ended up enjoying it. I gave it 6.5 out of 10 because it felt like... Because you know when you read these tie-in comics of other properties, it's always just kind of bland.
Yeah.
But this was actually doing things that were interesting. It had like a He-Man multiverse.
Yeah.
And I liked the idea that the blue guy seems to be Skeletor in this universe, and he's the only one who can stop the anti-He-Man. Yes. So, I gave it 6.5 out of 10. I ended up actually enjoying it once I sort of stopped being confused.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a lot to confuse you as well. It doesn't. This one doesn't hold your hand at all, you know?
No.
This one's like, okay, we're diving in.
It assumes you know everything about He-Man that there is to know, which I didn't, so.
I
ended up catching on.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm impressed. So, yeah, so look, I mean, it's good fun, and there's this, like, I'll tell you, this is funny, actually. So I have this – there's this He-Man and the Master of the Universe omnibus that James Robinson wrote, and I really want to get it. But I just constantly – it's I'm sort of justifying the price to myself, and it's just an eternal battle I'm waging. And I'm just not sure if I – like, for the collection from omnibus, like, I just don't want it to be shit. Do you know what I mean? So I'm thinking of buying the first trade digitally and just kind of playtesting and seeing what it's like. Because James Robinson,
definitely,
most of the time I really like, but – I don't want to commit to a full-on, like, you know, full-on massive... It's a big omnibus. Like, it's one of the big boys kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Unless you're absolutely sure you'd like it, I wouldn't...
Yeah. You would jump in kind of thing. Yeah, fair enough, man. Also, by the way, I forgot to announce this, and I wanted to get your reaction. Yesterday, I was sitting on... You know, I was at work. It was kind of at lunch hour. I was flicking through things. I picked up the Rawhide Complete Collection on DVD. Off Amazon. 59 DVDs, man.
59?
Clint Eastwood, back in the, I think, 50s or 60s. Yeah, I think late 50s into the 60s for 8 seasons of Rawhide. Rawhide! Yeah, I picked it up. And Stu was there, and he was just laughing at me. He was just laughing. He goes, he goes, Dave, did that need to happen? I go, you know it did. I needed this. I thought you'd appreciate it. I know you're a Clint fan, you know?
Yeah, I've actually never seen Rawhide. I know of it, but...
I've seen a little bit of it. I haven't seen a lot. It was a big purchase. But, I mean, it goes with my collection. I've got the Rockford Files on DVD, which I fucking love, the Equalizer 80 show on DVD, and the Fugitive on DVD. I love them all, and now I've got... I mean, I have Rawhide, man. So...
Yeah, sweet.
That's where my fucking life is right now. I'm pretty happy with it. You know, kicking some goals. So you gave it 6.5, I gave it 7, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, it was pretty fun. What about the cartoon version, like the little kind of like, it was almost,
yeah.
I don't know what you call him, almost like a computer kind of character.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was kind of like almost like a Pac-Man version of He-Man. I thought they could have had the actual TV one as well.
Yeah.
I guess it's similar to the comic book one, you know?
They kind of had the toys.
Yeah.
I don't know. It'd be cool if, like, yeah, more toy versions showed up.
It was pretty cool. Then we had the question, The Deaths of Vic Sage, issue one. Jeff Lemire on writing duties, Dennis Cowan on art, Wilson Kevich on, I think, inking and covers. Dude, I fucking loved this, man. I love the question series by Denny O'Neill and Dennis Cowan back in the day. I'm slowly reading through it all on my iPad. I've got it all on my iPad. But, dude, this was honestly as good a comic as I've read in the last couple of years, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, I really – dude, I dig the question, man. I think he's pretty fucking interesting.
So does he usually – like, I know obviously Rorschach was based off him because it was originally supposed to be the question, but does he really speak that much like Rorschach normally? Or?
Yes. Like, the way Jeff Lemire was writing –
he goes,
Yeah, well, he's kind of philosophical, you know, and he's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Like, he'll a lot of the time in the Denny O'Neill question, he talks like a flat-out, like, real hard-boiled noir style. But then there are these kind of, like, Zen Buddhism underpinnings to the story, I guess is the best way to describe it, you know. I dig the original question. I'm slowly reading through it. I'm, like, halfway through. And I thought this was a really nice way to sort of, honor the original series. Some of the stuff mirrored the original issue. There was a sequence where he was going to the guy fixing his mask that kind of mirrored a scene in the original issue one of The Question by Denny O'Neill.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool.
Man, I gave this 8.5 out of 10. I'd recommend this. If you're a Question fan, I think you've got to rush down to the store and pick this one up. What did you think?
I was a bit mixed.
Yeah.
I initially was turned off by that opening line about good and evil.
Yeah.
But then I realized that, you know, The Question probably, like, isn't correct about a lot of his philosophies, which I think was kind of the point.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's kind of flawed. Because it was the line, he's kind of flawed, dude, is the best way to describe it. Like,
because what was the line? The line was like, oh, if you don't know if you're good or evil, you're probably on the wrong side. And I'm like, oh, good people doubt themselves a lot. But, yeah. And then there was like an interview page, which is a bit of an eyesore. It was trying to be like Frank Miller
yes.
at the news station.
Oh, yeah.
And did you spot the Better Call Saul reference?
No.
Because he was saying that he was following a car or something, and that car was going past Hamlin and McGill.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. So I'm like, wait, did they just reference Better Call Saul? Because that's really, like, odd, but it's great. Because, yeah, obviously the law firm in Better Call Saul is called Hamlin and McGill.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, so, like, if it's a coincidence, it's a pretty big one.
I think it's a little joke, you know?
Yeah, I really got into it, though, when he went into, like, this is when I got hooked, is when he went down into that, he was investigating, like, this ancient organization, yes. this old organization, he, like, starts getting those weird visions.
Yes.
And, like, this sort of weird horror kind of starts to enter into it, and he sees, like, the pit in the middle of the room, and, like, that's when I got hooked. Like, I loved everything to do with that, I loved. Mm. Everything else, though, with, like, the mob boss and stuff and the riots, I'm like, eh, but I'm sure they'll feed into it later, but I was really into that stuff, so okay. I would give it I want to give it 6.5, but I liked it better than He-Man, or I thought it was better than He-Man, mm-hmm. so I'll probably give it a 7.
Okay, I think that's fair.
Yeah, so I mean I'll read the next one, which is usually like a, which is usually what you want, right?
Yeah.
So it's got me to read the next one.
Well, that's fair. I mean, look, dude, I gave it 8.5. I enjoy even, like, because the original Question, at least when I've read it, there is plenty of mob boss stuff. And it is kind of a mixture of hard-boiled, noir, and then something else kind of thing, you know.
Oh, I don't mind mob boss stuff.
Yeah.
It just, it didn't draw me in.
No, I hear you. I hear you.
But, like, this is also, this is the first solo Question stuff I've ever read as well.
Okay, yeah.
I'll point it.
Yeah. I mean, I've read that stuff from the original, and I've read the stuff where Renee Montoya is the Question when Rucker did it in Pipeline.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that. I'm a bit of a fan of it, but I think we did the first issue of it, the first series of it, and Stu really didn't like it, whereas I really did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we had a real difference of opinion, which is nothing fucking new. And but no, it was interesting because we had like a proper conversation about it. It's sort of a series originally that always thought it was a bit more important than it really was. Like, it was always a bit, the philosophical stuff was always a little bit hammy to me, personally. But I kind of dug it as well. Like, I like the art and stuff as well. Anyway, so at least it's keeping you reading. And I think it's apparently going to go in, like, multiple incarnations of the Question through history and stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So the back page was him kind of in the Wild West, for example.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting.
Kind of like what they did with the Iron Fist.
Yeah. Oh, what? Who? What do they do? Iron Fist.
Yeah. Do you remember the Immortal Iron Fist? Yeah. There was all the previous Iron Fist.
The Pirate Queen, for example.
Yeah, and then there was like a Iron Fist who was like a Western.
Yes. Yes.
Iron Fist.
Now that was good. That was good stuff, though, man. That from memory, that was some pretty damn good stuff. You know.
Oh yeah, no, it was.
Oh yeah, I love that. That Immortal Iron Fist run. It's it's one of the classics, really. I always thought that was. I'd read really any Iron Fist other than him appearing in an event or two that I'd read. Do you know what I mean? Like I kind of knew who he was more than anything. That he was. I knew there was a guy called Iron Fist, basically. You know, but that Iron Fist run with Brubaker and Fraction is just fantastic. Really, I mean, it's some of my favorite comics. Yeah, and okay, so we finally got to the last issue, because we only did three weekly comics this week. Was Marauders, or Marauders, I don't know what the pronunciation correct way is there. Enjoyable issue. I mean, this X-Man reboot just keeps on drawing my interest. I give it 6.5 out of 10. I like the stuff with the Hellfire Club. I love Emma Frost, Sebastian Shaw, mixing in with stuff about, like, Kitty. I mean, to me, this is intriguing. Where were you?
I was kind of the opposite. I was just thinking, this X-Men stuff keeps boring me. These issues that we've covered, they've never drawn me in. This whole island thing that's going on again, and the X-Men, and I was reading this, and I thought, like, out of all of them, I thought Marauders would be the one I'd probably enjoy the most, because it seems to be, like, a pirate thing. But even then, I didn't really enjoy this. I was bored for a lot of
there
it.
There is a lot of filler in it. Like, I'll say that. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
It's not... it doesn't really make the best use of its pages, in a way. Like, there felt like there was a lot of stuff that wasn't very important. But then there were some moments, like the stuff with the Hellfire Club, that I really enjoyed. I don't know. Like, this X-Men relaunch, it's definitely not a hit out of the park, is it?
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, like, most people like it, though, right? Like, it's pretty popular. That's what I've heard. Like, even when I was at my local comic book store, they're telling me I should check out all the X-Men titles. And maybe it's just because they haven't been around and big for so long. Or, you know, maybe, like, when you compare it to recent events, you get shit like Event AVX. So this is obviously, you know, looking better than that. But, I'm just not really into it.
I mean, you know, you can only do what you can do. Now, that leaves us out of weekly comics, and we're discussing our trade of the week, The Crow. Your pick?
Yes. We didn't do a rating for Marauders.
I gave Marauders 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give it, like, 4.5.
Stu is really good at maths. Could always do the calculations. I'm not sure what that is. Is it, like, 5.25 or something? Something like that. Stu was always good at maths, and he could just do it straight away. But, like, look, The Crow. Your pick, Connor. I'm gonna say it up front.
Yeah, my pick.
A real fucking slog. Like, a real, for me, one of the toughest reads I've ever had on the Signal. I didn't even finish it, but I spent hours on this, man. Like, I've been reading this thing like a millstone around my neck for days, and I was reading it while the cricket was on, and I just was like, I don't need to read anymore. It's the same shit page after page. I just thought it was really, really lame. Like, and I get it's acclaimed. I know that I'm really sorry to hear that his, like, you know, girlfriend died in the car accident, and he wrote this expressing his pain. And
stuff. Oh, I was wrong about that, by the way.
No, she was killed by a drunk
driver. It wasn't a... Yeah. And the whole thing with that is he told her to come pick him up because he didn't want to get a ticket.
Right.
And then walking to her car, she got killed by the drunk driver, which is why he was so torn up about it at the time.
That's hugely sad, and all due respect to the guy for that. You know what I mean? Like, that's horrible. That said, I've got it based on what I'm reading. I thought this was the same fucking two pages of comics for what felt like hundreds of pages. And I just thought The Crow sucked. Like, the character, like, he's sort of like a clown with a smiley face. Was he undead? Was he back from the dead himself? It was never very clear. I sort of appreciated bits and pieces of, like, the vigilante stuff, but, like, and even some of the personal stuff. Like, look, it's a deep read in a way, but, like, what was killing me was, like, the small text in black and white that was, like, philosophical stuff, and I was like, oh, tune me out. Like, I was struggling.
So, I couldn't find any small text anywhere. Are you reading digitally, or?
Man, it was small, dude. It was, like, a lot of text written small and, like, long-winded. And I was just like, I can't be bothered reading this. Like, it's just, it's tough for me. Like, I get the ambition is high. Is it ahead of its time? Probably. But it just felt like, for me, it was just, like, aggressively not my cup of tea, you know? Where are you on it? Give me your reaction, man.
Okay, so we've talked about different opinions a lot this podcast. This is a pretty different opinion. I absolutely love this book. I thought it was fantastic. You know, I'm actually so surprised that, like, this is his first proper work, and I'm so surprised it's as good as it is. I found a lot of this, like, I recognize a lot of this stuff in the book I could relate to. A lot of it, like, and if I couldn't relate to it, I could understand it. I loved his use of poetry. I loved, like, the poems he used. He definitely has a flair for his pessimistic poets and artists.
Like, it's all very depressing.
Yeah. And it's just, like, I really love some of the dialogue. I love how the crow talked a lot of the time. You know, there were some lines which made me laugh, like, you walk straight out of a Bosch painting, which is, like, a famous pessimistic religious artist, and he just did these really crazy paintings. And I don't know, it made me laugh because they're very, remind me of this, I guess. You know, I love the artwork. I loved the sequences that have kind of been added. It's like a different kind of art style where they're more about him reflecting on stuff. And, you know, there's just some imagery with him and death, which you don't know is actually death until the end of the book, which you probably didn't get up to. You know, like, funnily enough, if I had least favorite parts, it would have been the vigilante stuff. That's how opposite we are on this. You know, I loved all the monologuing. I loved all the stuff he hated, I think. You know, this was really my jam. I thought it was brilliant.
Cool. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And, like, he does get a bit whiny.
Yes.
But I like how the crow talks in this, and the crow is actually telling him off for always whining. He's like, man, why are you always going back and beating yourself up over this? Why are you constantly digging your own hole here? And also love, like, the whole symbolism of the crow itself. You know, it's like kind of ancient symbol with the Odin and stuff, and like a bunch of other religions as well, which is the same as the movie, really, except the crow didn't talk in the movie. And, I read all this with Brandon Lee's voice in my head.
I loved the movie of the crow. The movie of the crow I fucking loved at the time.
Which is why I'm kind of surprised you hated the book, but you loved the movie. Like, they're definitely different.
Personally, I haven't seen the movie since, like, 1993 or whenever it came out. You know what I mean? Like, so that was it's been a long break between drinks that I've seen this movie. I don't know, man. Like, it was just, I was just struggling, I think, you know, like, and I was just, I really pride myself. I want to apologize to the listeners because I pride myself on always reading the material, but this and Christ on Infinite Earths and Time and Tide Aquaman, I was just flipping pages by the end. I was just like, I'm done. I'm toast. I've run out of rhythm. I was like a bowler in cricket who just couldn't land the ball on the pitch. I was really struggling, and I was like, I'm out, dude. Like, I've read enough to have – I've read, like, 75% of it, you know what I mean? And I've read enough to have a critic
– Yeah, if you don't like it at that
and I've read enough to have a critical opinion kind of thing, I think, at that point too. You know, like, I have – and there are parts – like, I'll give it a 5 out of 10, you know what I mean, personally. But I also think if I'm being very objective, it's more like a 7 out of 10. You get what I'm saying? My personal reaction.
Yeah.
I appreciated, like, some moments, like, when he's, like, some moments in it are very touching, like, where she's, you know, like, the vision of her, and they're, like, playing with the Christmas tree or whatever it was, and he gives her the ring. Like, those kind of, like, romantic interludes, I thought were good.
Yeah, I think a lot of those were from, like, his own
and I thought
life.
They were very,
like,
good.
That was things that happened in his
very,
life.
Like, very good. Yeah. I thought they were very good. And I thought that was kind of interesting stuff. But it was just, like, some of the, I don't know, some of the action scenes I just thought were poor. And I'm just not that into endless whining. You know, like I just get to a point where I'm like, dude, we got it. Fucking laugh. You know, and, like, I don't mind a bit of introspection, but this was, like, let's go fully introspective. Like, let's, you know.
Oh, this whole book is introspection.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, but I guess, yeah, for this, I didn't consider it all to be the same thing. Like, it was the same tone, sure, but it went through the five books, which is pain, fear, irony. The last one was death. I can't remember the second last one, but, like, I kind of thought, you know, they were different. Maybe not like super different, but they definitely had like different kind of magic behind them.
Yeah.
Each book. Yeah, I mean, like, you know,
it's even interesting that we're coming at it from two separate angles. Like, I would say to read it to listeners out there, like, honestly, you owe it to yourself to check it out, because I think it is open. I could imagine many of our listeners being on either side of this discussion, you know? Some of them will just be like, no, thank you. Others will be like gobbling it up. I'd love to hear what an Adam the Computer would think about this one. You know, guys like that, a Neil Matthews, a Jimmy Terzis. Like, where would they be? Because I think it's a very open to interpretation kind of collection. Like it doesn't lack depth. Like, it's quite deep. I just found it kind of boring. But that's me and my taste. And I sometimes wish, I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, why can't you be deeper? Like, why can't you enjoy philosophical things very much? Because I enjoy them at a very surface level, but that's just me.
I mean, do you think that's something, do you not generally enjoy philosophical things? Because you enjoyed Black Hole.
I love Black Hole. Yeah, I like,
you know. And that was
yeah,
deep.
But you know what I think the difference was? This, like, and I hate to talk badly of it, because I get it, that came from a place of pain for this guy when he lost his wife. But, like, it's just, I don't know, for me this felt very, like, goth teenager kind of angst.
Oh, it is absolutely goth.
Like, and I don't have much patience for that kind of stuff. Like, I'm sort of like, okay, kids, you know, the eyeliner's fantastic, but there's a real world out there. You're going to have to get a job, you know? We can't sit around and cry forever.
Yeah, actually, Mark hates The Crow, the movie. He had a similar complaint. It felt very teenage angst. But I don't know, man. Like, I think, like, pain like this, it's kind of like that thing, you know, when you see someone really crying, they look stupid. Like, if someone's blubbering, like ugly, they look stupid. It's kind of like how I... ugly crying. Yeah, like, when most people, like, find out someone died or they're grieving, like, do ugly crying. They're into, you know... And I think since this is, like, he's just channeling his... I guess kind of the thing we pointed out, and the thing I like about it, is it's so... there's no shame in this book. Like, he is just putting everything he is feeling onto the book, which happens to be kind of ugly crying, in sort of...
Yeah, no, I do.
Artistic, do you know what I'm getting?
Yeah, he's not afraid to show his innermost feelings and like, everything. I read on the Wikipedia for it that he was hoping this would be a cathartic experience, but unfortunately when he was writing, he was just getting more angry. It was interesting. Like, the concept interests me of that kind of stuff. I just... for me, it was a little, like, if I hadn't known that this was a, you know, he had a genuine loss in his life, I would put this down to almost, like, just emo kid having a kind of, like, what he thinks is a deep character kind of thing, you know? And I don't mind, don't get me wrong, I don't mind a bit of that in my literature. I just have a limit, and this just kind of, like, exceeded the limit of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like... I don't mind a bit kind of thing. Like, I like Ed Brubaker, and Ed Brubaker often has, you know, some sort of morose storylines, but there's usually a bit of humour, and I didn't feel like the humour in this landed at all. I always felt it was a bit try-hard kind of thing. I just had a lot of issues with it, really.
I didn't even know there was humour in this.
At times, the Crow was trying to kind of be funny, but I don't know. Look, it's a rare event on the signal. It's only happened 3 times. Christ on Infinite Earths, Stu and I both struggled to finish and we were flipping pages by the end. Time and Tide Aquaman by Peter David was appallingly bad and we were flipping pages. This was just a slog. I got through 75% of it and eventually I just said, I can't go any further. You know, like this journey you're taking me on is very sorrowful. It's like listening to, you remember the band The Cure? I used to like The Cure when I was about 15 with Pimples. And, like, if you said to me now, Dave, you've got to listen to a Cure album, I'd be like, you know what, can I just kill myself instead? Like, you know.
Well, actually, the guy who wrote this is a big fan of The Cure. Me. And it inspired his writing of this partly. So it's funny you mentioned that.
Doesn't surprise me at all. it doesn't surprise me at all. Look, it comes from a place of grief, I think. People who are suffering, because apparently she was killed by a drunk driver, which explains the rage. as well. And he also took the storyline from the papers of this couple being killed or something, and they stole the engagement ring, so he used that in the story. So that wasn't him. Because at first I was like, did she die from a violent crime? Like, but yeah, if your significant other gets wiped out by a drunk driver, you're going to be pissed at life, you know, like if you,
especially if you're the one who told her.
Well, you're going to have guilt, you know, survivor's guilt, you know.
As well.
So yeah, don't get me wrong. Look, I think it was a noble attempt, which is, I mean, I'm giving it objectively, I'd give it a 7. Like, you know, my personal ranking was more like a 5.
But yeah,
it's a noble attempt. Like, it's artistically, it's got merit. Don't get me wrong. It just wasn't for me. Yeah, eventually. I think I've said everything I can say.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
You like to wrap up the crow? Put a bow on it, man, because I've kind of been the negative on this one.
Oh, no, it's fine. Like, I find interesting because we're reading the special edition. So, like, some of those sequences, like the sequence of the horse and stuff, which comes into play later, actually. He rescues the horse or whatever. But, like, they were written, like, 10 years after.
Wow.
Like, they were always planned to be in this story, but, you know, the ending of this has, like, a kind of happier ending where he forgives himself, but that wasn't in, like, the version that was released. Right. So it's kind of, like, this kind of meta thing where it's, like, he's added to the story now that he's finally has forgiven himself over what happened, and it's kind of made it a more complete story, which I just find really interesting. He also talks about Brandon Lee a bit at the end because he felt really bad about that as well.
Very sad. Killed by a blank on the set of The Crow, yeah?
Pretty much he was just like, yeah, I wish I never made this fucking book,
really?
Et cetera, because then he'd still be alive and all that stuff, you know?
Wow.
Because they were pretty good friends,
put the gun, the blank on him, shot it, and then the blank actually killed him, I think, is what happened.
Yeah, I think the force and the blank killed him. It was just a really horrible, like, everyone goes conspiracy. There was no conspiracy. It was just a really horrible accident and overlooking some safety procedures. Actually, the guy that died recently, he's a good actor. He's been in a few things I like. He's been in Supernatural and stuff. But, you know, when he died, all the headlines were saying, man who killed Brandon Lee died, and I'm just like, man, you know, they don't need that shit. But anyway, to put a bow on it, I love this. I found a lot of moments of it beautiful. You know, I don't think it was absolutely perfect, but for me it was close. Sometimes it got a bit too, I don't want to say edgy for me, but there was a couple of moments where I was like, but other than that, I think it's a beautiful book. I really love it. If you like this, if you just want to go like balls deep in this really introspective story about grief.
Yeah. This is the one for you.
In fact, like as Dave said, check it out. And by the time you're like halfway through it, you'll know if it's for you or not. And if it is for you, you'll probably absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think it's a love or a hater book, you know?
Yeah, so I give it 9 out of 10. I was a huge fan. This and Black Hole, very strong books to me. They both made it into like my favorite graphic novels. So, I'm sorry for inflicting this on you, Dave, but I'm not sorry for inflicting it upon me because,
it's all good, dude.
I'm really glad I read
this. There's definitely, never apologize for that. There's definitely a lot of merit here. Even as we're talking, I'm looking at some of the artwork, and the artwork is fantastic. Like, you know, like there's a lot of stuff to like here. I'm being a bit sort of hyperbolic. You know what I mean? Like, there is definitely a lot of stuff to like in this book. And to admire from a creative standpoint. It just wasn't my cup of tea. But a 9 out of 10, I mean, that tells its own story, doesn't it? And I'm going to officially give it a 7. So, because, I want to be very, that's my objective score. Yeah. Like, if I was an Olympic judge, I'd give it a 7 because I think technically it succeeds on some levels. It's more the content of the sort of angsty whining that loses points for me, you know. And the repetitiveness of it, like, I felt it didn't have enough gears to it, you know. But there are bits I like. Like, I quite enjoyed the romantic scenes, which were clearly memories. Yeah. Like, and we've all had those relationships where you have those moments of tenderness and stuff, you know. So from that angle, I enjoyed it. Well, that puts a pin in our discussion of The Crow. Very fascinating that we came at it with two such different angles, you know.
Yeah. Very different.
Kind of
yeah.
Enjoy. By the way, there's a big sale of Miracle Man on Comixology. I'm just, while we're on the show, I'm just putting them into my shopping cart. You can get, for $15 US, you can get the three Alan Moore trades. They're like $5 each. Yeah.
Or, nice.
They're actually, two of them are $4 and one's $5. And that's the complete collection of Alan Moore's Miracle Man that he did. So, I just want to announce that one to listeners. We're coming towards the Christmas season. We'll probably do a Christmas special and, you know, do some Christmas themed stuff. There's generally a fair bit of material that comes out around that period. I'll play some Frank Sinatra Christmas music on the show as always. You know, I'm a bit of a Christmas. I do enjoy Christmas.
Yeah, how dare you?
I'm actually not a Grinch. I actually am one of those people who enjoys the Christmas season. Especially I like the music. I like Christmas music. Especially all the old classics like Dean Martin, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, all those guys, you know?
I like the, you know, there's a Shatner Christmas album coming out.
I'd be all over it. I love William Shatner when he does his music and stuff.
Metal, apparently. Really? So.
Oh, my God. I've actually heard quite a bit of his stuff. He's pretty cool, actually, William Shatner.
Yeah, what's that album he did where he did covers of all those songs?
I know he did one with Ben Folds, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
He's done some good stuff.
Yeah.
So next week we're going to be doing Judge Dredd, The Cursed Earth, which is available. You can get it as a single trade in itself. You can get it as part of a case file. It's pretty accessible. It's early period Dredd, and I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't read it in probably 15 years, if not more. Probably 20 years, but I'm always
I can't wait. Yeah.
We did Dredd Chopper Goes to Oz storyline previous on the show. Stu gave it 3 out of 10. I'll never forget it. I was like losing it at Stu, and but I love Judge Dredd, and this was a real expansion of the brand where they started to show more of the world outside Mega City 1. So yeah, dude. So you've got it in Case Files Volume 2, yeah. Excellent.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, anything else? I do want to thank everyone who's joined up the Patreon. Please like us on the Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter. If you are interested in stuff like Cinema of Doom and other things, please join us on the Patreon. It's very, you can go in for as little as $1. And we appreciate everyone who does that. The main show will always be free, but we are going to put more and more stuff into the Patreon. As I said, Dean and I just did Great Escape last night, and we are going to do Hellraiser in the not-too-distant future, within the next couple of weeks, to next 2 or 3 weeks, we get a chance.
Both good movies.
And Connor, can you let listeners know about your podcast and stuff and where they can find you?
Right, so my first podcast is Sons of the Dragon, the Immortal Iron Fist podcast, and our latest episode, which is coming out on Monday, will be Rebecca and Carl covering the Absolute Carnage, Lethal Protectors tie-ins. I was taking a break the week from podcasting, full stop, the week that was done. So, and as I mentioned before, last time's a Krypton with Ray from the House of Zod, also a High Priest of Khonshu. We are doing Kingdom Come. That will be up by Monday. That will be the first half of Kingdom Come. And the second half of Kingdom Come will be coming out 2 weeks later. So be sure to check those out. Kingdom Come's great. You know, read it. And then obviously I'll be back with you, Dave, next week to talk about Cursed Earth. So.
The Signal of Doom.
Yeah.
The
Signal of Doom.
Blazer strong, man. We are beaming from the swamp these days. You know what I'm saying? We are blazing at Signal. On that note, thank you to everyone. We wish you good night and goodbye.
See ya.